Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Saturday, August 17th, 2019. This is episode 1618. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by DoorDash. DoorDash connects you to your favorite restaurants in your city. Get $5 off your first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and use the promo code TECHGUY. And by SimpliSafe. SimpliSafe protects every door, every window, every room with 24/7 professional monitoring. Visit simplisafe.com/twit for free shipping and a money-back guarantee. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and smartphones and smartwatches and all that jazz. 8888 Ask Leo. That's my phone number if you want to talk high tech. Let's do it, okay? Lots to talk about. I just came back from an up-and-coming conference. Spent 5 days in Orlando, Florida. By the way, nobody goes to Orlando, Florida in August, and I know why. It was hot and humid, but man, it was a hot conference. It was all about this new thing called podcasting. Wow, it's hot. We are at peak podcast. That's what the kids say. Peak podcast now. It's pretty exciting. They're about 3,000 people there. I know that's nothing compared to CES when you get 180,000 people showing up, or you know, any of the big conferences. But still, it's been interesting to watch because I've been doing podcasts, and I bet you know a little bit about podcasts. If you listen to the radio, you should love podcasts, right? Podcasts are just the on-demand radio. That's all. You listen to it on your phone, just like you probably do music nowadays, right? Or your computer or your Amazon Echo. Yeah, you can do it on the Amazon Echo, too. That's pretty cool. And, you know, you listen to whatever you want, whenever you want. It's pretty cool. It's been fun to watch because, you know, I started podcasting before the beginning. I mean, way back in the 2004, right in the very, very first flush of it all. And I foolishly at the time said, let's not call them podcasts, kids. That's confusing. That's Apple's thing, the iPod. We don't depend on the iPod, do we?
Yes, we do, Leo.
Oh, yeah, I guess you're right. I guess we do depend on the iPod. But I just felt like maybe podcast wasn't the best name for it. I wanted to call it Netcast. And stupidly, for the last 15 years, because I'm a hard-headed, stubborn fella, that's exactly what I've been calling it on my podcast network. I mean my Netcast network. I've been calling them Netcasts. Oh, yeah. Much to the confusion of everybody. What's a Netcast? Well, it's like a podcast, only with an N. It's the same thing. Although, isn't it true that you don't really have to listen to podcasts anymore on an iPod? In fact, does anybody still have an iPod? Some people do, I guess. But mostly, don't we listen on our phones or our Echoes or, I mean, everywhere? Is a YouTube video a podcast? It wasn't even around when we started. It is now. Is a YouTube video a podcast? Well, I guess not really, but it is. You watch or listen. You can even listen. Yeah, there's audio YouTube. You can listen wherever you are, whenever you are. So is that a podcast? There's no iPod involved. When you listen on your Amazon Echo, is that a podcast? What is that? When you listen to this radio show right now on the radio, is that a podcast? Well, no, it's a radio show, but on the other hand, you can listen as a podcast. So it is, in a way, a podcast. In fact, my parent company, iHeart Media, has started. In fact, they started right before the Podcast Expo. I guess that's kind of it tells you something. They put out a press release saying, we're going to start doing podcasts on the radio on Sunday nights, maybe on this very station. Is that a podcast? It's so confusing. Anyway, I give up. I'm going to call them podcasts because that's, and you know, the nice thing is for years when people say, well, what do you do for a living? I've said, oh, I'm on the radio, because I can't really say I'm a podcaster because they go, then it's a long conversation. What's that? Well, so now, but now I can say it proudly. I can come out of the closet. My name is Leo. I am a podcaster. And it was, it's kind of fun to watch what's happening in the podcast world. So I'm a dyed-in-the-wool radio guy going back 43 years. That's when I got my license, 1976. Yes, in those days, kids, you needed to get a license to be on the radio. And I have it. My FCC radio telephone license, third class, with broadcast endorsement. And by the way, a lot easier to get than a ham license. I'm just going to say a lot easier. But there is math. Math is involved. 43 years I've been a radio guy. Love radio. Love the idea of this medium where it's just you and me. There's nothing. There's no pictures. I've done a lot of TV. The problem with TV, you need pictures. It's radio with pictures, and you always need pictures. And when you're talking about technology, as we do, computers and stuff and the internet, what are the pictures? You see them all the time when you see a TV segment about computers. You see a screen scrolling stuff. You see a man hand on the mouse. You see a person typing on the keyboard. Because what is the picture? Give me a picture of what the internet looks like. But TV needs pictures. I like radio because I can talk about it. I can make a picture in your mind. I can talk about it. I love radio. And I think podcasting is just radio without a transmitter, without a tower. It's just people talking to people. And I love it that it's become so popular. Yay. Yay, team. Do you listen to any? I think it's something like 60% of all Americans listen to podcasts once in a while, at least a little bit. It's a great thing to discover, because partly because there's stuff on podcasts that would never, ever be on the radio, ever, including maybe this show. I don't know. this show is kind of, you know, it's a radio show, and we take calls. In fact, we're going to do that in a bit, 8888 Ask Leo, as soon as Leo stops talking. I have to admit, the other podcasts I do, you probably couldn't get them on the radio. Stuff where we talk for like 2.5 hours about just insane inside baseball stuff, you know? That's really probably not something you'd put on the radio. But that's what podcasting is for, all kinds of crazy stuff. Sometimes, in fact, some of the best podcasts are just a couple of guys talking. That's not bad. Bernie Sanders was just on with Joe Rogan. Elon Musk was on it with Joe Rogan, and then Joe Rogan got him to smoke a joint. Got him a little bit of trouble. Just a little bit. But that's the kind of thing you hear, and that's what I like about podcasts. Anyway, we're very glad to be part of that. And I'm saying hello to all my podcasters, which is pretty much everybody now. Everybody has a podcast because it's so easy to do. Why not? Why not have a podcast? You should have a podcast. You and you and you. Pretty soon there'll be more podcasts than there are people listening to podcasts. I don't know what'll happen then. That'll be kind of crazy. Then we'll have to come up with something different. Actually, that was one of the things that I found most interesting about podcasting, was how it's kind of in this stage now. It's no longer in its youth or even its adolescence. It's kind of in the stage now where it's a big time thing. There's money in it, and you start to see big brand names buy up podcast networks and stuff. I think that's kind of interesting too. I think that's very, very, very interesting. Welcome to this wonderful world. It kind of is like the way blogging was. Blogging was at first just this hobbyist thing, this silly hobbyist thing, and then everybody got all excited about blogging. Remember, and you had blog ads and the ad tech, and it kind of got kind of crazy out there for a little bit. And this company, remember, I don't know if you remember way back when, you remember Tumblr? Early 2000s, guys named David Karp and Marco Arment created this really easy to site to blog on, T-U-M-B-L-R. They called it a Tumblog because stuff just tumbled out of it. It was kind of cool. Then all of a sudden, Yahoo bought them. What did Yahoo pay? More than $1 billion. More than $1 billion for Tumblr. Didn't really go anywhere. Yahoo ended up kind of, they didn't shut down. They just kind of dribbled off, and eventually Verizon bought them, and Verizon didn't know what to do with Tumblr, mostly because it was full of porn. So they said, well, we're going to turn the porn off, and then everybody left. And then Verizon really didn't know what to do with Tumblr. And so then, they sold it to a blogging company that does know what to do, the WordPress company, the company that owns WordPress Automatic. And that, do you know what? So this company that sold to Yahoo for $1.1 billion sold to Authentic this week. Not Authentic, Automatic this week for $2 million. $2 million. Wow. But you know what? I'm glad, because it might bring back blogging. Well, that'd be great. I like blogging. Blogging's awesome. Blogging's like podcasting. It's the non-commercial side of the internet. Let's bring it back. 888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. We could talk high tech. Kim Schaffer's here to answer your calls. Anything on your mind? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. It's a miracle. Every week I come in here and I say, Kimmy, don't take no Schaffer. What's she doing here? Again. Hi, Kim. You look like you're regretting it.
Regretting what?
Being here.
No, I'm just me and somebody else who works here, we're commiserating that the traffic getting up here is getting,
it's getting worse and worse every week. You don't come from that far, though.
I'm not that far. It's 25 miles, and it used to take me 25 minutes.
So
and now
sorry.
it was 50 minutes. It was an hour today, almost.
Traffic's getting bad everywhere.
It's getting bad everywhere. Too many people.
Well, I don't think there's much we can do with it about this unless you want to be Thanos. Snap your fingers. I don't think that's a good idea.
No, that wasn't a good idea.
Not a good idea. So I'm glad you're here, because if it weren't for you, I'd have to answer these phone calls. And they scare me. They scare me.
Hey, you know, I think you've done it before, didn't you? When
I have had
broken
to.
Broken on this side.
I have
had
to.
You had to just do it off the cuff.
But did you? I'm going to tell you something about me you don't know about me. I'm scared of the phone. I don't like using the phone.
Oh, you know what? I am too.
Oh, yeah. So we're in the right job.
I can do it here, but
holy
somebody
cow.
Will tell me to make a phone call.
No, I don't. I say, no, you do it.
You do
I make
it.
My wife make all the phone calls.
My mom will be like, call your brother. I'm like,
no.
You do it.
So I was talking to somebody. I think this
I
is
totally
kind of
anti-phone.
Cockamamie, but somebody explained it to me.
Uh-huh.
Because the cell phone, apparently, over the last few years, the cell phone networks have gone, and even the landline networks have gone to voice over internet protocol, VoIP, right? And they've slowly, bit by bit, added a little bit of delay. Just, you know, that's how it is on networks. They add a little delay.
Okay.
And it's not appreciable. Maybe it's a quarter of a second, you know, 250 milliseconds. Maybe it's a little more. Maybe it's half a second. But and so we don't notice it exactly. But you know when they go on CNN and they go to the reporter who's in Istanbul and there's
you
a satellite
that delay for
and they go,
sure.
"We're going to Jamie in Istanbul. Hello, Jamie."
Yeah. And then she answers 5 seconds
Hi,
later.
Hi, Bob. Well, it's not as bad as that, but it's almost as bad as that, and it's making us hate the phone. That's his theory.
Really?
Yes.
I don't think so. I think that's cockamamie.
Yeah, I think so, too. But I had to tell you.
Yeah. I don't. But what is the purpose of them doing that?
Adding
money, the delay.
Money.
Oh.
Money.
Oh, for people that are actually paying.
They don't have to
money?
Have lines. They just have the internet now. Everything's on the internet. They don't need actually, you know, money. What's the purpose for anything these big guys do? Money.
I guess.
They do it because they like us so much, Kim. That's why they do it. No money. So they're saving money, and phone calls are getting worse. Maybe they're not really saving money, because I bet you I make a lot fewer phone calls, don't you?
I can
even
look,
now.
I can look and see when the last phone call
yes,
was made.
Yes, exactly. Months. Outbound calls, never.
Yeah.
I only answer it if it's like, oh, it's my kids. I got to answer it.
Right. Oh, yeah. And, yeah, you will not get me to pick it up. If you're not already in my contacts, I'm not picking you up.
So what are we doing in talk radio?
Because we're behind this shield and we're talking just to each other. And it's a one-on-one conversation.
Oh, that's it. Well, thank you for answering the phones, even though you hate it. And I'm going to now take some calls.
Line one, Neil in Phoenix.
I don't want Neil to feel bad. Thank you, Kim, because I do like talking to people on the radio. I don't know why it's different, but it is. Hi, Neil.
Good morning, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Great. Haven't talked to you in a while, but I ran into a little conundrum here that I need your help with.
A conundrum?
Conundrum.
It's like an enigma, only crazier, more puzzling.
Something like that. So a while back, I had an Asus router, and I had a Samsung printer that I bought. It's a laser printer. It was inexpensive, but it does the job.
Yes.
And it's a C430W is the model.
Oh.
So I had it on the Asus. I had it on the Asus router. But the only way to connect it to my wireless network was to use WEP.
WEP.
So I turned that on. I know it's not advisable, but I turned it on, hooked it up, turned it back off, and that was fine.
Fine.
Since then.
You sure it's WEP or WPA?
WEP.
Okay. It's not that one button connection thing?
Right.
Right.
Now, the problem is since then, I upgraded the Asus router and put an Eero in its place, which works great. But as you probably know, Eero does not support WEP at all. And I have not been able to figure out how to connect this Samsung router to the Eero because there's no interface like you would imagine to do that with. There's no obvious way that I can go in and have it grab the Eero IP, get into the Eero system so that I can use that network. There's no mechanism. I don't have a computer to hook it up to because I have an iPad and an iPhone, but no actual PC or Mac.
Yeah. This was that silly thing. I don't know if it's really WEP. WEP is previous to the current WPA2 encryption standard, but there was a one-button networking thing, and I think that's probably what this Asus uses, where...
Well, it's not the Asus anymore. It's the Samsung.
I'm sorry, the Samsung. Yeah, where you would push a button on your router and then push a button on your Samsung, and they would go, oh, hi, nice to see you, and they would all pair up like that, right?
There's, right. And that was before, and not with the Eero.
Yeah. Because it's really, really, really insecure. WPS was the name of that technology, WPS. So most routers no longer support WPS, but I think so. You're saying the Samsung has no manual interface to pick a Wi-Fi access point and enter a password.
Correct. There's no way to do that unless if I had a computer, I could probably plug it in and get into it that way.
Samsung has no interface at all. What is this Samsung device?
It's a printer. It's a color laser printer,
and it has no interface at all. It doesn't have an LCD screen or anything.
Well, no, it has an interface, but not for that. There's no
setup
menus for. There's no setup option in that, as you would imagine. Basically, you have to either go online and log into it through an online mechanism, which I've tried to get into, but I can't get a password for it, no matter what I try. So I'm.
Boy, you got me. That's a failing of the printer. Obviously, it should have a manual interface. Let me do some research. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Scott Wilkinson coming up. So, is it? I think it's WPS you're talking about. Which?
Well, I remember it's WEP, but as my
WEP. So you're saying it's a really old printer that doesn't support WPA2?
Oh no! I'm sorry. You're right. It is WPS.
It's WPS. Yeah. So WPS, which some wag in the chat room has dubbed way poor security has been deprecated. Nobody uses it anymore because it really was bad. It let basically any bad guy get onto your router. But it strikes me as, and I do remember, I guess there was this era where that was the way people, but there's no setup anywhere on that Samsung that lets you choose a Wi-Fi network and enter a password. That sounds so strange.
No, they either have to connect it to a computer, which I do not have.
Can you give me the model of the printer? Do you know offhand?
Yeah, C430W.
Boy, that's... Scott's on vacation. Oh, yeah, no Scott this week. I'm sorry. Hey, Damien, Scott has taken the week off. I completely forgot.
And Johnny had a baby.
And Johnny what?
No Johnny.
And no Johnny. So basically, I'm all on my own. I got Dickie, but no Johnny or Scotty, just Dickie. Okay, so let's see here. Samsung Express SL's 430 color laser.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous. So what they want you to do, well, it's funny, I'm looking at it, and it's on an HP site. I guess HP made it. You don't, is it a color laser? Is that what it is?
Yes. Yes, it is.
Yeah. And you're right. It doesn't look like it has too much. Why would they? So they say you can configure it through a web interface.
Correct. The problem is I can't get onto the
web. How would you get on it?
Right. You'd have to.
You'd have to connect an Ethernet jack to it. Does it have an Ethernet port?
Yes, yeah, so it's right now. It's on the Eero with a wired cable, and that does work. The problem is I have to move the printer away from where the Eero is, so it'll have to go wireless. I don't have enough, or spring 50 feet of cable. So I'm trying to get it on the wireless, but it's on there now. If I had a way to interact with it,
so what you do normally with something like that is you'd hook up a laptop with an Ethernet cable to it directly, and direct connect and configure it that way. Whoa, this is a terrible solution, though. That is awful. So can you see it on your network once it's connected to the Eero? Can you go into the configuration menu or no?
No, not. Well, that's what I'm trying to figure out. If I know what the IP address is of the printer, but I have to figure out how would I interact with it.
You just enter that into your browser. You enter the printer IP address into your browser.
The
Eero's giving the Samsung an address, a 192.168.1.something address. That's right. The address of the printer. You can look in the Eero settings for the printer, and it'll tell you what its IP address is. You enter that into your browser and your desktop, and then you'd be
right.
able to.
If I had one, right? But I have an iPad or an iPhone. I have no desktop.
Well, you enter it in the browser in your iPhone or your iPad,
okay.
And then you'd get presumably that web-based interface, which you could then use to put your Wi-Fi access point name and password into the printer. That's such a lame way to do it, but that's how they've done it.
Yeah, they set it up in such a way that I have the IP address for the printer. I can tap it right here. That's the TV, but I can get the printer's IP address. To your point,
yeah. So go to your iPad or your iPhone, enter that IP address in, and it should open up the printer's interface. I got to run. But once you do that, you should be okay. Modern printers, of course, will join your Wi-Fi network. Actually, this is a really great thing because you don't have to have a USB cable leading to your printer. You don't have your printer next to the computer. You can print from any computer in the house. And modern computers, you can also print from iPhones and iPads using AirPrint. You can also print from other devices using Google's Cloud Print, even when you're away from home. So you can cloud print at work, and it'll come out of your printer at home. And all this, though, requires being able to get your printer on your Wi-Fi network, which, of course, he couldn't do because this old printer, by the way, Samsung sold its printer division to HP. So you're not even talking to Samsung anymore. So this old printer only had this it's called the WPS button that made it easy for you to pair up a Wi-Fi device with your Wi-Fi network. You pressed a button. You remember this on your router, and then you press a button on the device, and they magically shake hands. The only problem is the bad guy on the curb out front of your house could also press his button and get into your network. Seemed like a good idea at the time. As always, with convenience, out the window goes security. So they pretty much got rid of that WPS thing, as somebody in the chat room, some wag in the chat room said. WPS stands for Wee Poor Security. So they got rid of it. And this Samsung printer still is configurable, but as our caller pointed out, you had to do it from a browser. So if that's the case, this printer, as anything that could be configured that way, would have an Ethernet port, a network cable jack on it. And so you could connect directly to the printer and then fire up your computer, your laptop, and sign into the printer's webpage for configuration and do it there. Say, here's my Wi-Fi access point, here's the password. That's more secure. It's a better way to do it anyway. A little more complicated. Uh-oh, he said, I don't have a computer. Oh, boy. I only have an iPad or an iPhone. Oh, okay. By the way, if you only have an iPad or an iPhone, you probably should buy a printer with AirPrint because then you don't have to worry about all this. It all happens magically through an Apple technology called, well, they used to call it Bonjour, but nobody could pronounce Bonjour. So now they call it Rendezvous. Which nobody can pronounce, except it's an English word, too, so I guess it's better. Bonjour. Hello, printer. I would like to print to you. Okay, ça va bien. Print away. I'm sorry. Everybody sounds like Pepe Le Pew to me. So the new way of doing this is better, but not, and more secure, by the way. Rendezvous is much more secure. Bonjour. But I guess they call it Bonjour now. It was Rendezvous. That completely blew my anecdote out of the water. Bonjour, ma chérie. Je vous printe à vous, à votre petit printeur, s'il vous plaît. No, you don't have to speak French to use bonjour, but it helps. Anyway, where was I? So I think that what he needs to do, he has already hooked it up to his router, which is good. That means it has an IP address. Everything on your router has a local IP address. In the case, his case is using an Eero router. So it's a 192.168.1.something. If it were some other routers, it's 10.0.1.something. But in any event, he should be able to use his, believe it or not, Safari on his iPad. Once he figures out what the address of the printer is, and you can query the router for that, and just log into the printer and then set it up. And that's the last time you have to do that. Au revoir, printer. It's been wild. Let's go to Wailuku. Wailuku, Maui. Am I saying that right, Jim? Wailuku?
Wailuku.
Wailuku. Hello, Wailuku.
Correct.
Aloha.
Hello, Leo. Aloha to you.
I love Maui. I love Maui. I just love it. That's my heaven. What can I do for you today? I bet it's beautiful.
Well, oh, yeah. It's either 82 or 83. It gets kind of boring.
I love that. That's my kind of climate. What's up? What's up in your world?
Well, first of all, I have the same kind of printer as Neil, and you're exactly right. Yeah, that's that WPS, and I just have the iPad and the iPhone, and so what I do...
Wow, you have exactly Neil's setup. What are the chances of that?
It's kind of weird, huh? And I bought it at Office Max, and so I hired a guy from there to come over with his laptop and set it up for me.
Yeah, and I bet he connected a cable from his laptop to the printer, set it up, and went home. And it all works now, though, right?
Yeah, it works fine. Right. I print so rarely that I got to read the instruction manual every time I got to print a page.
Yeah.
It works fine.
Printing's like phone calls. It's something we do a lot less often, isn't it?
Yeah, that's true.
Yep. So what can I do for you today?
Problem, Leo,
yeah.
I saw these ads for the Norton Secure VPN.
Yes.
Virtual Private Network.
Yes.
And I got it.
Okay.
Now I'm using it, and what happens is sometimes on some pages, a page will come up and say, well, we can't find your server. And so I turn the Norton off, and I can get right to that page. Is that what is happening?
Yeah, unfortunately, sometimes with security, these security programs can actually get in the way. Well, it's protecting you, so it can get in the way. I'm not familiar with the Norton VPN, but I'm guessing it's setting up a proxy that you go through to get online. And now, does it always the same sites, or does it sometimes come and go, or how does that work?
It's usually a hotel site, like if I'm booking a hotel or a flight.
Yeah.
So I can get to my bank, this is, okay, and
well, that's good. Yeah, because that's what you want to use it on, is sites that you really want it to be secure. I would just say turn it off, go to the hotel site. Don't give them a credit card number, but, you know, well, I guess you could, I mean, if it's a secure site. They may be, this is more and more common, blocking VPNs. I don't know why they would, unless maybe I'm just thinking in my brain. A VPN hides your IP address. It hides who you are. A lot of people use it not only for security, but for privacy. And it may be that the hotel site has been bombarded by bad guys making bad reservations using VPN so they can't be tracked down. Something like that. In which case, they'd say, oh, we better not allow people to come in over a VPN. We want to at least be able to log your IP address when you get in, so we have some idea who you are. That's all I can think of. So it may be that some sites, and you'll run into this, our chat room, for instance, blocks VPNs for kind of the same reason. We want, so a lot of people used to come in there and spam our chat room through VPNs. We couldn't block them because they would use different VPN IDs each time. So we just prohibit it. So I think that may be it. You might try another VPN just to see, but I doubt that Norton would operate any differently than anybody else. So it's for your own good, and the hotel's good. And it's probably, and it's almost certainly safe to turn off the VPN on the hotel site. Here's what you want to look at. In your browser, there will be an indicator that you're on an HTTPS secure site. There'll be a, usually it's a padlock or a key, or it'll, or the address will be green. And it usually will say HTTPS. There's an extra S for secure, :// at the beginning of the name. A lot of browsers don't show that name anymore, but it'll be there. If that's there, then you're fine. It's as if you have a VPN, but it's the hotel's VPN encrypting traffic between you and the hotel.
I see.
So then you're safe. That's what banks do. It's what Amazon does. It's what any place that takes credit card numbers should do. You always can look. And if you want to know, you click that padlock and you get information about the certificate, and make sure the certificate matches the site. If it's you're on Marriott, make sure the certificate was given to Marriott. Then you know it's proven that you are actually talking to the right website. So that's a kind of nice feature.
I see. Yeah, that makes sense. That's kind of what I thought it was, but I was just wondering if it could have been something else.
You're
more
smart, Jim. Aloha. Have a great day.
Aloha.
And
thank you, Leo.
Wailuku. I'm so jealous. Thank you, user 4683. You're the only person who likes how I sing in the whole wide world. In the whole wide world. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Get that party started. 8888. Ask Leo the phone number if you want to give me a ring. Let's talk high tech, you and me. 888-827-5536. Line 4, John in Ojai. Hello, John.
Hey, Leo. How are you today?
I am well.
Well, good. I'm glad to hear that. I want to give you a short little story. This is the first time I ever called a program before, but your predecessor at KFI, I forgot his name.
The late, great Jeff Levy. Yep.
Yes. And I used to listen to him. I love listening to him. He was talked about, you know, computers, and I was finding that I was a closet geek.
Yay.
And, then you came on, and I said, I don't want to listen to this guy. I don't want to listen to him talk about all these other things.
He took Jeff's job. I hate him.
That's right. Exactly. And then I didn't listen for a long time, came back and found you. And I don't know if this is going to go across well, but I fell in love with you. So, anyway.
I love you too, man. No, and I love Jeff. Thanks. And I had been on his show many times. Jeff was a great host. I did not take his job. He left. He went across town to another radio station, and KFI's
KCBS, you know, I think is one.
KNX. He
went
to.
KNX. Yeah, KNX. Yeah, right. Yeah.
We shouldn't say the name. They're bad guys.
They're
evil
sorry.
Ones. but he went over there, and this was in 2004. So you kind of get an idea. We're talking a few years ago, 15 years ago.
Right.
The brilliant program director at KFI, who's still there, that tells you how brilliant she is, because program directors usually have the career span of a mayfly. Robin Bertolucci's been there longer than I have, 15 years. And she called me. We'd worked together up in San Francisco. And she said, I have a hole on Saturday and Sunday. Can you fill it? And I said, yes, I can, gladly. And I have never left. So I'm very grateful to Robin and to the KFI team. They've been wonderful to me. And thank you for those kind words. And Jeff did great at KNX. He went over there and unfortunately passed away a few years ago. But he was a really sweet guy. I've known Jeff for years, too, and a great guy.
Yeah, he seemed like he was, and he explained stuff very well. Yeah. I liked him a lot, just like I like you.
Yeah.
But I will say about your replacements that you have, they're all very good, and they all seem very nice. they just don't handle the candle to you.
Oh, I mean, thank you.
you have so much knowledge that the guy that's on Channel 5 that comes in and replaces you.
Now, don't say bad things about the wonderful Rich DeMuro.
No, I'm not. No, he's a great guy. He knows an awful lot. But I find he sort of seems to be more in tune with iPhones and so on, but he doesn't have the expanse of knowledge that you have.
He's not as old as I am. I've been doing this so darn long. I've forgotten more than Rich knows. And that's not anything wrong with that, but just Rich is young, and he's 20 years younger than me. Yeah. I was doing this in the 70s this is crazy. I've been doing this for a long time. So what can I do? Thank you for the very kind words. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. I have my very first computer is an Acer Aspire 5680.
Yeah.
And I ended up, I think it was a very high-end computer at the time, because it was...
They all were, my friend.
Well, that's true. That's true, yes.
Okay.
But this one went from analog to digital, so I have a DVI-D port and things like that.
Yeah, it's pretty old. Yeah.
Right, exactly. So I had originally came with XP Professional because I was trying to get the very best that I knew. As soon as I bought it, it would be outdated the next day. And so I did that. I was in that place where you could upgrade to Vista, and it went to Vista Business.
Okay.
And I had that.
Okay.
And so now I've decided after my...
This is, by the way, all this, this is when you were listening to Jeff Levy. That's how long ago you got this computer.
So that's very true.
Okay, yeah. Keep going.
Okay, and so anyway, this is outdated, and my Office 2007 was outdated, so I said, well, I just got to go to Windows 10. And it accepted Windows 10.
Did it?
Everything was fine.
Nice, all right.
Yeah. And it definitely runs quicker and better, but I'm now wanting to
It's pretty ancient.
Oh, it is.
Yeah. In fact, you're rapidly going to get to the point in time where Microsoft actually won't support it anymore, where they'll just say, I'm sorry, we can't. So let me just give folks who are listening the rundown on this.
Sure.
It's a 2 gigahertz Core 2 processor. That's not too bad. Unless you upgraded the RAM, did you upgrade the RAM? It only has came with 2 gigs of RAM. Did you upgrade
four.
It? You have 4. Good. All right.
Yes.
That's why you can run Vista and Windows 10. You really need that. Did you upgrade the hard drive? Because it was originally a 160 gig, 5400 RPM drive.
Yes, I've got a 500 gig in there.
Okay. So you've kind of nursing this baby all along.
Right. Well, actually, what happened, too, was I ended up doing something really stupid, and I damaged the motherboard. So I had to replace the motherboard.
Oh.
And so in the process of doing that, now this thing I always thought was 32 gig. And so I replaced the motherboard, and actually Acer had replaced the motherboard at one point in time. Then I did something stupid, had to replace the motherboard.
This is really a Franken Acer.
Oh, yes, it is.
Yeah.
Yes. So I replaced it with the same motherboard that they put in, and so I upgraded to Windows 10, thinking I've got 32-bit, and it comes back to 32-bit, but 64-bit operating system. I'm going, huh? What's this? And so I just went ahead and redid it again, and now I have a 64-bit with a 64 operating system. I presume that motherboard was a 64-bit, was just running 32-bit, but I really don't even know. I thought that was really bizarre, first of all. So I'm 64-bit on this thing now.
Okay, good.
Is that possible? I mean,
yeah.
How can that happen?
Yeah, because Intel chips were 64-bit long before Windows ever got around to acknowledging it. Microsoft's holy grail, that's not the right word, their holy trinity is... Legacy. Compatibility with old stuff. They never, ever want to give up on that program that you bought in 1998 because there's a lot of businesses still use those, right? So as a result, Microsoft supported 32-bit software for a very, very long time, much longer, in fact, than Intel. So Intel's had 64-bit chips for a real long time. So, yeah, it's not at all surprising to me that you would have a computer capable of a 64-bit operating system.
Okay.
64-bit isn't inherently better than 32-bit. Really, when we're talking about that, we're talking about the size of the processor's registers. The registers are areas in the processor where data is moved into, and the bigger the chunk of data, in many cases, the faster the computer. If you're drawing graphics, big chunks of data is better. On the other hand, word processor, you're wasting a lot of space because most word processors are 16-bit. The data they're handling is 16-bit. So you have a lot, so it's less efficient. So in many cases, a 32-bit operating system is actually faster than a 64-bit operating system because a lot of the data you're dealing with isn't 64-bit. On the other hand, the future is 64-bit. All the hardware is 64-bit. I don't, you know, the data bus may not be, but that's less important. In any event, soon this, I love it that you're keeping it going, and if it operates fine for you, fine. But, you know, at some point, you're probably going to want to get a new computer, right? Or maybe not.
Oh, no, this is my backup computer. To be quite frank, this is the computer I'm using as my fax machine.
Oh, fine, then.
You don't have
a fax machine. Oh, that's perfect. You're right. You need it. It's probably more modern than your fax machine would be. So good. Well done. Bravo. Right.
Exactly.
Yeah, you can keep it alive. That's why. Yeah, it's 64-bit, and you're using 64-bit Windows, and all of that's better, more secure, more modern. So good. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. It's weird, though, isn't it, that you didn't, I mean, you know, you got it in the 32-bit days.
Yeah. And so the other questions I'm going to have for you, I don't know if you want to wait until everybody gets back on.
No. We got a long break here.
Okay, great. So I went ahead and I tried to find drivers for all this stuff, and of course
where your troubles begin. That's right. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And so I went to this place. You know, I always try to go to the manufacturer or whatever, but I ended up going I've got my other computer, my actual real computer is the Lenovo IdeaPad Y700.
A little more modern.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Definitely. And but when I was talking to them about an issue, they sent me to Driver Booster to help me. And I actually found drivers there that helped me. And I also went to this thing called DriverScape, and that's where it really helped me because
you've got to be really careful here because so you're caught in a rock and a hard place. The companies that make the drivers no longer support them. They're done. So they won't offer them for download often. So you're right. These driver archives, they've just saved the old ones. But there's no support for them, and there's no guarantee that those are, in fact, what they say they are. So you always got to be a little careful. A driver, remember, has very low-level access to your system. So you're giving software from kind of an unknown source full, deep access to your kernel and other fundamental parts of your operating system. So it's a fundamentally risky thing to do. In fact, that's what happens. As you get older computers, it gets riskier and riskier to use them. And at some point, the ultimate risk is going to happen, which is Microsoft will stop supporting it, in which case you're going to have an operating system that is not getting patched. And at that point, you have to move. You could, what I would do is maybe look at Linux.
Okay, and I've heard you talk about that many times.
Yeah, Linux will almost certainly run well on that. And the thing about Linux is the drivers are kept up to date by hobbyists, by enthusiasts. And because it's open source, there's far less problems with these drivers being risky. They're, you know, so it might be a good candidate for, except for the fax stuff. You may not be able to find the fax software or the support for the fax hardware. So that's a question mark. You can figure that out by downloading a Linux distribution. I would probably, for this one, you want to specialize in older hardware. You don't want to get the fancy ones because they tend to eliminate more modern older hardware in favor of more modern hardware. But something like Lubuntu, LUBUNTU.net, it's designed for older computers. It's based on Ubuntu, which is a very modern operating system. And the nice thing about that is those drivers are vetted by Ubuntu, which means that you're not going to get them from a weird place.
Okay. Yeah, and the only reason I went to these other driver places was still obviously to find drivers.
It's the only place you can find them. I understand. It's just risky. You understand why it's risky.
Oh, of course, yes. No, I definitely do. And but with the one that I went to DriverScape, the reason I went to them was because Lenovo, in their support, had sent me there trying to help me. And so I thought, well, okay, if they're going to sort of send me, then I've got a little bit of confidence.
That sounds like a support guy who's gone off the reservation a little bit.
Yeah, well, I think so. Well, the things wouldn't work from Lenovo.
Probably not Lenovo's corporate recommendation.
Oh, I see. Okay.
But it was nice of him to do that. It's not, it's all right. A lot of people do it. It's not, it's not terrible, but it's just, there's the risk.
Right, exactly.
And this is why, ultimately, you probably do want to get you need to get a new computer at some point.
Well, I do have a new computer. This is, again, really like a backup computer.
Right.
It's really my fax machine.
Right.
And because from my fax machine from 94, it finally ended, 5 years ago or whatever.
Right.
I don't want to go buy it.
Oh, yeah. You're the only,
I'm an insurance agent, so I've got to have.
Actually, there's not, so for what you're doing, there's nothing wrong with it. And truthfully, if that's all you're using it for, you don't even have to worry about security because you're probably not putting it on the internet, are you?
Oh, yeah, I've gone on there because there's times when I will do stuff on my other computer and send it over to my other computer, to this computer, and then fax it, so I've got it in different places. And
you could put it on your local area network. At some point, you might want to take it off the internet. Because it's
okay, even though I'm running 10 and Defender and
I guess you're all right.
Everything else.
Yeah, but eventually 10's not going to get updated for that older machine.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
They cut off support. They cut off support for those processors. In fact, I think it's imminent.
I see. Okay.
Because they don't want to keep patching code for those processors. But again, their religion is don't break old stuff. So you may get by for a long time. But this was a big issue.
Okay. Well, it looks like I got everything working on here completely except for two things. One was the infrared reader, which probably I will never use.
Yeah.
And the other one was the card reader, which that seemed to mess everything up. There was some kind of glitch in that because that gave me a blue screen, and I finally had to get rid of that. And so I've got a plug-in, with the USB port to read cards if I need to read cards. But I don't know where else to go to look up drivers. And that was part of my question for you, too. Is there any place you can think of to go to look for drivers? Now, when I went to Acer, they I see drivers there that are 32-bit, and I thought, well, gee, I wonder if those would work, because 32-bit will run under 64.
Right.
Although
Microsoft's taking support for 32-bit out eventually, if not already.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
You're a good candidate for Linux. If you could get that fax stuff running under Linux, that would keep that machine snappy and happy for a long time.
Yeah. Okay. Well, great.
Hey, nice. Thank you for the kind words, John. I really appreciate it.
Oh, you're quite welcome, Leo. And I love listening to you. I tell everybody about you. And it's great.
Thank you.
Really appreciate your help in there and all the people you're helping.
Thank you, John.
Oh, I do have one last question for you. I noticed that there was a upgrade to the BIOS of this machine, but I'd already transferred to the 64-bit. And
I would do it.
So I'm.
I would do it.
It wouldn't accept it.
It wouldn't accept it. Okay, then you can't.
Can't, yeah. Well, I didn't know if I was doing something wrong.
No, you do generally want those because usually they're serious bug fixes. In this case, it's probably an Intel bug fix, but I'm not sure. So generally you want to do those. If you can't, you can't.
Yeah. Okay. Great. Well, thank you again for your help, Leo. I really appreciate it. It was wonderful talking to you.
Nice to talk to you.
Maybe I'll come visit you someday.
Please do, John. Please do.
Okay.
All right. Take care.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater, digital photography. We talk smartphones, smartwatches. Scott Wilkinson is taking the week off. I forgot to mention that. That's why he wasn't on last hour. Johnny Jett is traveling. He will not be on this hour. The Gizwiz will be here, though, next hour. So it's just you and me today, at least until Dick DiBartolo shows up. Sharon's on the line from Williamsburg, Ohio. Hello, Sharon.
Hello there, Leo. I'm so glad I get to talk to you, and I agree with the last guy. You are amazing. Thank you for all that you do, because I've learned so much.
Thank you. Well, I really appreciate it. Thank you for listening. Except,
I don't know what to do about this problem, so I thought, okay, Leo, maybe you can help me, because nobody else has been able to.
That's what I'm here for.
I have got a problem in the house, because whenever I'm home, and let's say that I'm listening to, because I listen to iHeartRadio a lot, and KFI I listen to a lot when I'm home in the evening, and then on weekend with you guys. So, but the problem is that it all of a sudden, on the iHeartRadio part, it goes out, and then it'd be out for maybe 30 seconds or something, that comes back on.
Yeah.
And so that happens. And in the morning when I'm getting ready to go to work, it does the same thing. And so, I'm listening to the station and getting ready, and it all of a sudden go out for a little bit, then it come back on. And it don't matter if I listen to KFI or whatever I'm listening to. It does that. But I am using iHeartRadio at the time.
Does your browser go out, or any of your other internet access?
I don't know.
So that's the first thing we got to figure out is this, do you remember the term buffering?
Uh-huh.
Remember that when you'd be watching a video?
Oh, yeah.
It happened a lot more in the old days. Yeah, it would just
I had that happen. Buffering. I'm watching YouTube.
Right.
I had that buffering happen when I'm watching YouTube.
So if you're listening to iHeartRadio, it doesn't say, because that would be really annoying, buffering. Yeah. But sometimes that has to buffer. And it's not necessarily, Cincinnati Bell. It could well be just your internet connection isn't keeping up for whatever reason.
Oh.
And so there's a couple of things that could be going on. There's actually quite a few. Bad internet is universal. We all suffer from it.
Yeah.
The internet connectivity wasn't really designed to do what we're doing. Streaming media, that's what this is streaming. It's a continuous download. The internet was really not designed for that. It was really designed for email and web pages, which aren't continuous. They send a little packet of data, then another packet of data, another packet of data. Sometimes the packets arrive out of order. It doesn't matter. I know where it's going on the web page. You put it all together, you got an email or you got a web page. That was much more robust, much less prone to the problems we have today from streaming media. Ironically, almost, at least half of what we do these days is streaming, listening to audio, watching video on the internet, whether it's Netflix or iHeart or, a podcast. A lot of what we're doing is streaming. And that is essentially listening to it at the same time as we're, or watching it at the same time as we're downloading it. The reason that's tough for an internet connection is internet connections, again, weren't designed to provide these packets of data in order in a timely fashion. But that's what you need for playback. If my words came in out of order, it would be hard to understand what I'm talking about. So,
sure.
Yeah. And to assemble a video or to assemble an audio stream, you need to not only get the packets in order, but you need to get them in timely fashion. If they don't, then there's a hiccup, there's a pause. Sometimes if you're on a Skype call, you'll hear that somebody's talking and all of a sudden they'll go, and then they'll keep talking. That is the Skype player playing the same packet over and over again till the next one gets here. So buffering was designed to fix that. But it doesn't work that well, and nobody wants it. The idea of buffering is when you first start a video or audio stream, the player waits usually typically about 30 seconds before playing it. So you press start, and you wait a half a minute, and then it starts playing. What it's doing in that time is getting 30 seconds ahead. It starts downloading right away. But because it's 30 seconds ahead, if there's a delay in a packet or a packet comes out of order, it can in effect throw, it shrinks the buffer, but it can affect, wait. And you won't hear any all the digital artifacts that you hear. The problem they found is nobody wants to wait 30 seconds. And in fact, the real problem is millennials. Darn them, they're the problem for everything. No, I my kids are millennials. I'm just mocking them. But they're impatient. I guess we're all a little more impatient.
Well, I was going to say, not only them.
So when we watch YouTube videos, YouTube knows this, and every website knows it, and iHeartRadio knows it. If it doesn't start right away, if it doesn't start within a few seconds, you leave. You leave. So all these companies are working as hard as they can to get it playing back instantly. But the problem is buffering kind of sometimes leaves by the wayside. And then you get a worse experience, which I suspect, now I'm going to tell you all the other things it could be, but that I suspect is what you're hearing. It pauses. Does it pick up where it left off?
Yes. Yeah. Or no. No, it doesn't.
No, it doesn't. Okay.
No, it doesn't. No, I lose some of it.
Okay. So
it's usually the thing I really wanted to hear too.
Of course it is. Never does that on the ads, does it?
No, I noticed that.
Yeah.
Exactly right. Never have that problem.
So that's one possibility. And it really is kind of amazing. The internet was never designed to do what we're doing with it, and we're doing it like crazy. And it's kind of impressive what engineers have done to make this work as well as it works. It shouldn't work at all. So then the other problem could be intermittent dropouts from your internet service provider. And you've called Cincinnati Bell and they said, well, we don't know. Let me ask you how fast they say your connection is.
Oh, I don't remember, but it's not that great.
So not that
well,
great.
One thing,
sometimes leads to buffering, right?
And I have a feeling that's what's wrong because they've got something new. They call it something. I forget what they've got come out in our area, but we're somewhat rural.
Yeah, oh yeah. You're on DSL and you're far from town.
No, not DSL. But it's not as good as whatever it is they're
what
coming
do you,
up
What
with
do you them. Have? What do they call what you have? It's not cable.
Oh, I don't know.
It's not cable. It's not fiber.
No, the fiber is what they're bringing, I guess.
Yeah, that's faster. DSL... Here's another bit of...
DSL. I had DSL a long time, years ago, but
You replaced it with something else, but it's from the phone
whatever.
Company.
Yeah, it is from them. And they even came out and added another... I don't know what this thing is, but they added two of them, which
okay.
is to boost something.
Yeah, okay. So you probably have bonded... You probably have VDSL2 or one of the new bonded DSLs, which should be better. But DSL... Little history lesson here. The phone companies were really getting worried about the cable companies, of all things, HBO. Mm-hmm. This is back in the 80s. And they decided, we're gonna start delivering video movies over the phone line. Ha! Crazy. And this never happened, by the way. But in the process of developing that capability, they created, oh, look, but we can send data over phone lines. The problem is phone lines is just a pair of twisted copper wires. It's hard to get – there's two problems. One, it's hard to get a lot of data down those little skinny wires. Two, distance really kills it. So if you're more than 2 miles from the central office, DSL won't work very well. And it sounds like if you're in a semi-rural area, you're far enough that you're probably not getting a lot of speed. They may have improved it with VDSL or ADSL, but that's kind of still limited. So my guess is, yeah, you're getting buffering. And there's not much you could do except get a faster pipe. So fiber might be one thing. Does a cable company
get
out to
you? Get it out here.
No. Of course they won't.
No.
You know
no.
why? Because there's one person every 2 miles.
I know.
They don't make enough money. They want to do it in population-dense areas. Is the cable company out there?
There is in some areas. I don't know if it's in ours or not.
That will be faster because they have a bigger pipe. Instead of two twisted little wires, they've got a coaxial cable.
Would it make a difference with the – because I have DirecTV, the satellite, would that?
No, you can do satellite internet where you are, but that has problems all to itself.
Oh, okay.
A unique set of problems. Don't get me started.
Yeah, I don't want any more.
I'm in a history lesson mood, and you don't want to hear it. I think you probably, it's probably just the nature of your connection. Are you on Wi-Fi?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, of course you are, because these things don't have hard wires. So get closer to the Wi-Fi adapter. Is it better if you're closer? Because that might help, too.
No. Nope. It doesn't seem to make a lot of
difference. It
doesn't make a difference.
Because
I thought that, too. I thought, oh, well, this will make a difference. I'll get closer to it. No, it isn't.
Yeah, I think
wondered,
it's...
Could,
yeah.
Something AT&T has my security in the house.
No, it's the same. It's going to be...
Would that mess up my...
It could, yeah. That's another problem. I can get started on Wi-Fi, and why Wi-Fi doesn't work like it used to.
Oh, boy.
There's a lot more competition for that signal, right?
Okay.
I think this is just what you're going to have to live with. That's why the radio is such a good thing.
Yeah.
Radio never buffers.
That's true.
Yeah.
Oh, but
I'm sorry. I know. I love iHeart. No. It's the honestly. This is the future. This is the future. Is internet audio and video? It's the future. It's what everybody wants.
See, I can't listen to you if I don't have KFI. What would I do?
You're listening to KFI in Cincinnati, in Williamsburg. Wow.
Yeah.
Thank you. I think we have a Cincinnati station. I'll have to look.
Really?
If I can find one, I'll let you know.
Yeah, hey, please do.
Pleasure talking to you, Sharon. Yeah, I think it's just kind of the way it is. I'm sorry.
Okay. Sorry. Well, thank you again.
All right.
Keep up the good work.
Thank you. And I'm sorry to be so professorial. My dad was a professor, obviously inherited some bad tendencies. Dear old dad, right? Well, now that you're asking, I'd love to tell you about the history of Dish Network. Now you can hit it, Big Pee-wee. All right, we're going to take a little break. Come back, more of your calls. 888-ASK-LEO. And don't forget, I put everything up on the website, so you can access that anytime. TechGuyLabs.com. No buffering. Tech Guy Podcast brought to you by Lunch. Lunch could be brought to your home right now with DoorDash. When Aunt Pruitt started working for us, we brought Aunt's family to dinner. And as we went into the restaurant, his son Isaiah said, "Dad, they have DoorDash here." Yes, Isaiah. They have DoorDash everywhere now. DoorDash is in 3,300 cities in all 50 states in Canada. DoorDash is great because it connects your favorite restaurants to you so that you can have a Dasher come and bring you a meal whenever you're hungry. Tough day at school, stuck at the office, long day at work, treat yourself to the meal you deserve. DoorDash supports all of the big, you know, McDonald's, Subway, Chipotle, Chick-fil-A, the Cheesecake Factory. If you can't find something you want to eat at the Cheesecake Factory, you're not living, man. They got a 400-page menu. You can find something, and DoorDash will bring it to you. It's easy to order. All you got to do is put that DoorDash app on your phone. In fact, I set this up for my mom. She was tired of cooking. She's 86. I said, "Mom, let me buy you dinner once in a while." I set up the DoorDash app. I put my credit card in, and now it's great because my credit card company says, "Your mom just got a pizza." And I go, "Yeah, Mom. Right on, Mom." It's great. In fact, she uses it to bribe the grandkids. Will and Grady come over to Mom's, but only if she's got pizza. They say, Grandma, can we DoorDash tonight? And she'll say, "Yeah, we can DoorDash tonight." That makes me feel good. It's great. You should have DoorDash on your phone. In fact, right now, if you put DoorDash on your phone, Android or iOS, you'll get $5 off your first order of $15 or more. Just use the offer code TECHGUY when you make your order. DoorDash is awesome. Their slogan, slices on your sofa. This is not the best slogan for moms everywhere, but it is true. We have boys' night on Friday, and Michael brings like 4 or 5 16-year-olds. And what if 4 or 5 teenagers eat pizza? Slices on our sofa? It's worth it. Get $5 off your first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and use the promo code TECHGUY. DoorDash. Get it on your phone. They'll connect you to all your big name chains, but also 340,000 amazing restaurants in your city. Mom has a Chinese food she loves, a Thai food, pizza place she loves, Italian food she loves. And whenever she's in the mood, she just fires up DoorDash. I do the same thing. I love it. Have the Dasher bring you your dinner. $5 off your first order. Download the DoorDash app from the App Store under the promo code TECHGUY. DoorDash! Leo Laporte. The Tech Guy, 8888 Ask Leo. Big Pee Wee, our musical director, keeping me on the ball. Brock, Bellingham, Washington. Hey, Brock. You're on the air, Brock.
Hi, Leo.
Hey,
thanks,
Brock.
Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
I have an issue. My mother had a stroke.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And she lives in California. And I'd like to be able to control her television while I'm still up here in Bellingham.
That's an interesting conundrum.
I'd like
conundrum.
To be able to. Well, I figured out one part of it, I think, which was I used an old sling box.
Yeah, you know, it's so funny you say that. Sling box will do it. And the only way I know that is because I was sitting watching TV and it kept changing channels. And I finally realized my kid was watching TV in his dorm room and I had stupidly given him access to my Sling account. And he was changing the channel and I changed it back and he'd change it back. We were having a battle. So, yes, they don't make that anymore, unfortunately. Dish bought Sling and now they just do an internet solution.
Yeah, well, yeah. The other stumbling block I found was that the smart TVs, there's no output. There's no video out, at least on the TCL that I have in her den.
Yeah. Why do you want TV out for that?
Well, to go to the input of the Sling.
Oh, I see.
I'm using...
Yeah.
I'm going to use a Wyze Cam to look at the TV and another Wyze Cam to look at her. So when she falls asleep, I can turn the TV off and I can adjust the lights in the room from up here in Washington. And then when I see her stirring or get up and looking around.
Oh, what a good son you are.
Oh, thank you.
I'm
trying.
Isn't that? It's so hard when you have a parent who's not nearby. You can't go help.
Yeah, and I feel less guilty because I can look in on her and... In fact, I can even let my niece or my sisters run off and take a jog or go to the store, and I can
isn't that great?
Remotely watch
yeah.
her.
So yeah. Can she speak?
She's starting to get better at some speech, but the biggest problem is she can't control the remote. Her hands aren't...
Well, the reason I ask about speech is because you can control a TV with speech. So if she can speak, she could control the TV herself. There are a variety of ways to do that, like the Fire Cube, the Fire TV Cube that Amazon makes. It has Amazon Echo built into it. And you could say, turn on TV, go to channel 12, or you can even say, watch Oprah, which in this day and age is a miracle because she's not on TV anymore. But you could do you can do things. But if she's if the speech is still not there, you could probably...
It isn't.
Yeah. So I am able to change... Let's see. I think I'm able to change the channel on my Xfinity X1 remotely. I think I can do
that. Well, I'm able to do... If I'm there, if I'm physically there, of course you can do anything if I'm logged onto our network.
But Xfinity, at least with their system, will let you log on across the internet. And the reason is so you could set the DVR to record stuff. I do that all the time. I forget to record stuff and I log in. So that would be one thing to inquire with her cable company if they have some sort of remote access solution. They may. Does she have cable TV?
Yeah. She does. She has Spectrum.
So that, ask Spectrum if their box will do it. That would be one. Kind of, it would be very much like the Sling, right? So,
I guess.
A Sling would do it. That was kind of, in my opinion, was a flaw of the Sling, but actually I could see how it'd be useful.
The thing I'm inquiring about really is, if there's something I don't know, is there just some thing that would, of course it would do it, some Logitech thing or some other device that would be my IR blaster.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm racking my mind trying to think of what could be out there that would do that. Remote over the internet TV channel changing. Like you, I know what your sense is. Of course there is, but what is it?
Every time you search, it brings you to a solution, but not the right one. It's like, well, you're in the bedroom and the thing's in the den.
Right.
Like, well, that's not what I want to do. I want to do what your son did to you.
Yeah.
Change the channel.
Yeah. I'm thinking, I know you can, so I do think a smart home device will be able to do this for you. And you'll be able to do it, for instance, if she has Amazon's Echo set up and you're on the same account, you can use the Echo account remotely on your phone. You can talk to Echo and say, change mom's TV to channel 15. I'm almost certain you can do that. So that's maybe going to be the solution, is to get an Echo-enabled device. I like the Fire TV Cube from Amazon. It's cheap, works quite well, and it can turn on all the other devices too. It's a remote. It's so funny. Because as we're talking, the chat room's coming up with all these solutions that are voice controlled. and that's not the problem. It needs to be internet controlled. That's why I asked if she could speak.
I was going to say, the insidious thing about strokes are it like rewires your brain.
Oh, I know.
So it's like you say dog and she's thinking avocado.
Oh, so she has aphasia. So, yeah.
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 So it's like, you know, that. It's frustrating.
And she's 93.
Yeah,
I mean, honestly, you just want to put something on and she would just kind of watch it. It'd be fun. It'd be nice for her.
Right, basically. And like I said, when you see her fall asleep, I can tell the TV to shut off, or I can turn the lights on when I see she's awake. In fact, my wife sitting next to me is looking at her in the bed right now, and she's asleep.
Aww. So that's such a wonderful thing with these cameras now. I FaceTime my mom, and it's fantastic. So the thing to probably look at, it's $99. It's called the Harmony Hub. And it's designed to be a universal remote. It has infrared. You put it in her TV system. You can control it via Amazon Echo, but I believe you can also remote control it over the internet.
Well, I'll try that.
I would look at it anyway, and it's a Harmony Hub from Logitech. The nice thing is it's only $99. It has an app. And that's the question, is can I use this app to control the hub over the internet? All of them will do it if you're on the same network. And it supports Amazon Echo and Google's assistant as well. So once she gets better voice control, she could also use her voice to do it. Oh, I got a really weird way we could do it. Okay, this is crazy. I wouldn't recommend this. But if she has an Echo in her house, if she has an Echo in her house and you have an Echo in your house, you can talk to her through the Echo without her picking up. You just say, I can't remember the term, but message mom. And then it suddenly turns on the speaker and say, Mom, how you doing? And you can hear her. She can hear you. You should have that anyway, because you can talk to her.
I can do that right now with a Wyze Cam.
Right. So put the Echo in the house, and you can say, Mom, I'm going to change it to channel 12, okay? Then you can go Echo. In her house, it will hear you say, Echo, channel 12.
Yeah.
Is that wild? I mean, that's a little Rube Goldberg, but you're already talking to her. The hub will talk work with Echo. So, and by the way, the Wyze Cam speaker's not great, but an Echo sounds much better. So you could use a Google Assistant or Echo to talk to her, and it would sound much fuller voice. It'd sound better.
Right.
Certainly could control it. Just remember, you can only control, you can't control the same device. You can't use Echo to control Echo, because it's very confusing. So you'd have to control a Google Assistant with Echo. But the first step is to get something that controls the TV. That's a Harmony Hub or the Fire TV Cube. Both of those will work with voice controlling the TV.
Plus, the other issue I have is trying to make it so bulletproof that it's hard to troubleshoot it when you're 1,000 miles away.
Oh, of course.
You know,
I think it's called Drop-In. I think Amazon's Drop-In would be a good thing for you to have anyway. Drop-In on Mom. And if she has, you can get her an Echo show, which has the screen, and then she could see you. And then it's like you're there.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Then it's like you're there. Scare the crap out of her. My mom did it to me. Scared the crap out of me. My 86-year-old mom, she loves Drop-In. I'm in the kitchen. She says, honey. I went, what? What? Yeah, she scared.
Oh, my God.
She scared the hell out of me. We turned that feature off.
I was going to say, it's nice to be able to shut off the mic or the
picture. Yeah, we turned that feature
when you want.
Yeah. Hey, nice to talk to you. I got to run.
Thanks, Leo.
My pleasure, Brock. Take care.
Bye, Leo. We love you.
Thank you. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Somebody else is recommending Cavo, C-A-A-V-O. They make a really interesting TV box that controls everything. They have a remote app, remote control, and Scooter X, our chat mod, says you can do it over the internet, Scooter X, so if I'm away from home, I can fire up the Cavo app and tell my TV to come on and turn to Channel 12. Can I do that? Because that's what he needs to do. That's what he needs to do. I bet we can solve this. Is that, that happens in technology where you know there's got to be a way to do it. It's just obvious. There's got to be a way. But for whatever reason, nobody ever kind of made it happen. Or maybe just it's just kind of crazy. Scooter X says, yes, that's what it says it can do. Cavo. So this is an interesting product. Not cheap. The nice thing about the Amazon Fire TV Cube and the Harmony Hub is they're $100. Cavo makes a universal TV control center. Well, you know what? It used to be expensive, but that's because it had wood. But now it's only $159.99, so it's not too expensive. It's a universal remote designed to simplify everything connected to your TV. What you want is the remote that will work over the internet so I can turn on the TV when I'm not in the house. All right. So we reviewed it. I didn't review it, so I'll have to ask the guy who reviewed it. He liked it a lot. Sports 4K UHD, HDR, Dolby Atmos, works with soundbars, AV receivers. It's a kind of like an AV receiver itself, but different. It's kind of an internet connectivity thing. C-A-A-V-O. And if you have an idea, of course, you can call us, 8888-ASK-LEO. Always like to help each other. And there's another way you can participate. Actually, there's several. We have a chat room going all the time. You'll hear me mention it from time to time. That's irc.twit.tv, irc.twit.tv. Oh, and there's a Cavo for $59.99, huh? Okay, so that's different from the home theater kit. So there's just different kinds of Cavos, I guess. All right. And there's also the website. We'll put everything up on the website, too. Oh, yeah, Cavo Control Center plus Universal Remote, $59.95. So that's really cheap. Cavo service plan sold separately. Oh. The website is techguylabs.com. You can go there, and it's free. There's no sign-up or anything, and see everything we talk about. It's got a search, so you can find shows in the past. There's actually 1,618 shows there, so audio and video of all our shows. By the way, that's another solution. If you're having a hard time in Williamsburg, Ohio, listening to the show, you can always download it. Then you don't have to stream it. You won't be able to listen live, but you can download it from the website, techguylabs.com, audio and video. But the other thing about that website that I want you to know about, you can leave comments there. So if you think you've got a good way to do this, you can just go to techguylabs.com. We divide the website into shows. Each show is divided into hours, each hour into calls or segments. So you can drill right down to what was that? That was hour two, segment two, and find the question, watch it, listen to it, read the text response, see the links, and comment on it. And all that's free. We do ask with the commenting that you use, you sign in with a Google, Twitter, or Facebook account, and that's just because we want to keep spammers at bay. I don't do anything with that information. 8888-ASK-LEO. Adam, Claremont, California. Hello, Adam.
Hey, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. Hey, thanks for taking my call.
My pleasure.
I'm a little stymied. I just bought myself an LG OLED 65-inch, the C9. Beautiful okay. TV.
Beautiful. I'm a big fan of the LG OLEDs.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm plugging all my devices into it, but I have a Sony. It's a 7.2. Right now I have it operating in 5.1 channel, but a Sony receiver, a DN1080, STR-DN1080. And I don't know if I should plug all my devices into the Sony and then have the ARC cord to the LG, or plug everything into the LG and have the HDMI ARC go into the Sony.
Is the Sony a 4K HDR AV receiver?
Yes, it is.
Good. Because, of course, you want it to have the capabilities of the TV or you'll be missing out.
Right.
But since it does, my general standard on something like this is to have everything go into the AV receiver. That's what it's there for. And have it output to the Sony. The only reason you need ARC, to the LG. The only reason you need ARC is if the LG, which it is a smart TV and you watch something on the smart TV. Like, let's say you've got Netflix on the LG and you're watching Netflix on it. You'd need ARC because the picture on the screen needs to get its sound to the Sony. And so you connect the ARC on the TV out into the Sony, and the Sony's smart enough to say, oh, yeah, I get it. I'm getting audio, so I'll play that.
Interesting.
Yeah, so the AV, the whole point of an AV receiver really is to take multiple inputs from a variety of sources and then have a single output that goes to your television set.
Yeah, I'd originally bought it because I had the TV I just replaced had one HDMI.
Right. You needed it.
It's just dead.
Yeah. What you're doing then. What you did with that TV. The only reason you wouldn't want to, and this is the drawback of upgrading to this beautiful 4K HDR OLED screen, is everything else, in order to get that screen to live up to its promise, has to be also HDR 4K.
Yeah.
You have your AV receiver, but also your Roku or your Apple TV. Everything has to all be upgraded.
Yeah, yeah. And someone told me I didn't need my Fire Stick anymore because that app is built into the TV.
Well, yeah, so this is I'm not a fan of smart TV smarts because the TVs don't get upgraded as fast. The apps often aren't as good, and the TVs usually don't have processors as good. That LG may well. I actually like what LG's done with their smart TV. But often I say, yeah, it's better to have a standalone device, whether it's a Roku, Fire TV, Apple TV. Those get upgraded better. They have better processors. Their original intent was to provide internet connectivity to a television set that didn't have it. But now all the TV makers put smart in. You have a TV that has internet access and has apps on it. So that's going to come down to what you like best. But that's what the ARC's for. If you're watching Netflix on your LG through the LG, you'll get the picture, great, but where does the audio go? Well, you need to have it get back into the Sony, and you do that with ARC.
Got it. Okay. Well, very good.
Okay. Thanks for calling. You got a nice setup. You're going to enjoy it. So HDR is high dynamic range. The latest TVs are both 4K. So remember the original TV set back in the old days was about, maybe, you know, if you were lucky, 250 to 350 lines of resolution top to bottom. That was SD or standard definition. Then we got to high definition, which was 720 lines. That's a lot more top to bottom. Or full HD, which was 1,080 lines top to bottom. That's a lot of lines compared to, you know, maybe about 350 on your old TV. That's why I Love Lucy looks so terrible on a high-def TV. It wasn't designed. You're seeing more detail than Lucy put in. So it looks all blurry and weird and smeary. Most TVs have software in them to kind of fix that. They call it upscale, that low-resolution picture. But still, it's never going to look as good as it did on that old smeary TV. Well, we've gone beyond now 1080p full HD, double that, both in the lines up and down, so that's 2,160 lines up and down, but also in the width. So there's quadruple the number of pixels in a 4K TV. It's a lot more pixels. There's also high dynamic range, which means there's a bigger range between the darkest darks and the brightest brights. It looks more like real life. And more importantly, movies look more like they were shot. And it's a great experience at home. It's just an amazing experience. And they're getting less and less expensive, those OLEDs. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. SD was 480. Yeah, you're absolutely right, but you never got all of that because of overscan. You're lucky if you got 400 lines on an SD. More like 350 on most of those old Zenith TVs. So I know you're absolutely right. The spec for SD is higher, but those old CRTs, You know, if somebody would take the 35mm film, that's right. That was one of the things they did with I Love Lucy. Actually, I Love Lucy might have been the first to do on videotape, come to think of it. I can't remember. Wasn't that something Desilu was famous for, like recording their shows? I think it was. So I don't understand what Cavo, they have a $59.99 and $159. Oh, I get it. The $159 is with service. Ah, that's the difference. So you can buy it with a monthly fee at $59.99. You'd probably want to get it with service. And everybody's saying that that both the Harmony Hub and the Cavo remote will work over the internet. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, I take it all back. Let's rewind the show and start over. 8888, ask Leo. Well, not everything. Turns out, I Love Lucy was one of the first TV shows, not the first, but one of the first TV shows in the 50s to be recorded like a movie, not on, not live, not on kinescope, but actually on 35-millimeter film. 35-millimeter film. Now, of course, when you're watching I Love Lucy on your local TV, you're not watching that high-quality 35-millimeter film directly. But this is really good news. Earlier this year, in April, it was announced the National Comedy Center was going to take all the 35-millimeter negatives and digitize them. There's also behind-the-scenes material. There's lots of information. They're going to make it available at the Lucille Ball Desi Arnaz Museum in Western New York. So I hope, I would expect that once they digitize them, 35-millimeter can be HD. It would look really good. You could make 4K. You could make 4K digitizations of it. It would look really good on your nice new OLED HDR TV. If they do a good job of digitizing it, I would love to see them re-release that. A whole new generation would discover Lucille Ball. Wow. You got some splaining to do, Lucy. Matt in somewhere in Utah. Hello, Matt.
Hey.
Hey.
I got a solution to the TV switching channel problems.
Beautiful. You rock.
Dish Network. I use Dish Anywhere, and if I'm away from the house and I go to the channel that I want to watch, it gives me the choice to watch it on the TV set or watch it on my device. So if my wife was at home and I'm on the road watching TV, she'll see the channels changing just like you did with your son.
Dish, and you know why? Because Dish bought Sling, so it lives.
There's a Sling and a Hopper 3, and that's
awesome.
How it works. So.
Awesome. That's really great.
You know, but a long time ago, Sony made a device called a location-free player, which was to compete with Sling. I don't know if they still make it, but it was called Sony location-free player.
Slingbox was an advertiser for years on my podcast. I was a huge Slingbox fan. But times have changed, really. It's funny how everything's changed. People don't even DVR stuff anymore. It's all available on demand, right?
Yeah. I got another quick tech problem. It's
of course.
You got a sec? This is a strange one. Sync 3 in a brand-new Ford pickup truck is causing the air conditioning not to work.
Oh, man.
Do I just disconnect the battery to reset the whole thing?
And it works?
No, I don't know how to get it to work. It's intermittent. The AC turns on, then it turns off. Ugh. I've been driving for 200 miles in 100-degree weather.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
No AC. So I pulled over to call you about the Dish stuff.
I can't fix that. That sounds like a bug. Right. I was another sponsor for years. Ford was a sponsor of our podcast because they wanted everybody to know about Ford Sync, which I liked a lot. Then they went to My Ford Touch, which they designed in-house, which was a nightmare, an abomination. It was horrible. Then they dumped the entire Microsoft platform, and the Sync you have, Sync 3, I think is based on, I'll have to ask Sam, but I think it's based on QNX. But you know, it sounds more like you've got a wiring issue. It is the case, though, that these entertainment units do everything.
Everything is so tech-related. I get all of these dings and whistles and faults. There's something going on with the wiring, but
I think,
on and turn off.
I think that what you need to do is, on your trip, find a Ford dealer. This is the good news. There's lots of them. And have them reflash the firmware on your sync. Chat room saying.
I wish I could, but none of them could get me in within 2 weeks.
Ugh.
So that's my... It's a dilemma, but whatever.
It's a dilemma. Cars are too smart.
Yeah.
Sometimes I wish TVs weren't smart, cars weren't smart. Let's keep the dumb things dumb.
Yes.
Because you know what? Humans aren't smart.
I don't want fly-by-wire. I want a cable.
I want a cable. I know. Right. Exactly. There's a lot of pilots feel the same way.
Yeah.
Matt, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Have a good one. I'm sorry you're so hot. Something I don't usually say to guys. 888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number, 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. and Canada. Our show today brought to you by Remote PC. Oh, I love the Remote PC. See, I almost thought there might be a Remote PC solution for our caller with his mom. You know, set up a computer because he can access a computer. If the honestly, he could. If the TV, if she were watching on the computer, he could do this. Remote PC is awesome. It lets you access a PC or a Mac from anywhere over the internet. When you're not in front of it, even from a mobile device, it's a great way to upload and download files, to run programs, to even surf the net. It's like teleporting. Lots of individuals with home offices use Remote PC, small to medium-sized businesses, partly because the price is right, less than $6 a month for up to 10 computers. But I've got a better deal. I got a better deal. If you use promo code LEO at checkout at remotepc.com, you get the Leo Tech Weekend Special 90% off for the first year. PC Magazine gave them 4 stars, their highest rating. You will too. Go to remotepc.com. Sign up today with the code LEO and get 90% off. 90% off for the first year. It's the Leo Tech Weekend Special at remotepc.com. Old Chef Guy Richard up the coast a piece. Hello, Old Chef Guy Richard.
Actually over in Sonoma, but still in this, you know, in the zone.
In the zone. You're nearby. I'm trying to paint a picture. You just ruined it for
me. That's right. I bow before
inland
you.
Inland a piece. In the yeah, up geez. The valley a piece.
There we go. There we go. Valley of the moon.
Yep.
Have you ever tried cauliflower pizza crust?
I have done many things.
I'm not watching you, but I can see your face.
I have done many things with a cauliflower. I love cauliflower rice. Cauliflower is a miracle vegetable because it has no taste.
Right. There is a company making a pizza crust out of cauliflower.
Is it a keto cauliflower crust?
Yes.
Wow. Bruce and I are going to try that.
At least you have the crunch. You have at least the crunch. You won't have that gluteny goodness, that stretchy quality that dough makes.
That's what I want. You know, that's what I really want. Old Chef Guy's giving me a recipe for the ketogenic diet, which I am on. In fact, we've got a listener visiting us. Is it okay if I mention this, Bruce? He's visiting us from Long Island. He is on the same diet I am, and he was a type 2 diabetic on insulin. He's down to, you were 100, 150 units a day, down to 10 after 3 months on a ketogenic diet. I myself am a type 2 diabetic, not as far as advanced as Bruce, but my A1C, my measure, my glucose in my blood went from 7.0 to 5.3, which is low normal in just a few months. So thank you. I will get some cauliflower crust. How do you make that crunchy?
Well, because they must dust it with something. Maybe if you were to smash it, because you would boil it, and then at least in my mind, you'd then put it into.
This has nothing to do with technology, folks, and I apologize. I apologize, but everybody's got to eat right. The next time you're in Petaluma, just down the road, down the Valley of the Moon from you, got to go to the Shuckery. They make a breaded cauliflower wings with their own Frank's style hot sauce on it.
I'm hanging up. I'm in the car now.
To die for.
Oh my God.
Use a rice flour, though, so it's not strictly keto, but it's pretty darn good.
Wow.
You can have one or two. That's cauliflower. Right. This is the new cauliflower technology show here.
We could do a cooking show.
But that's not bad. I could do an eating show, but you do the cooking, I'll do the eating.
I could really do an eating show.
Mm-hmm.
I have a more technical issue. I have a Ford Fusion Energy with Sync 2, so that's a wonderful plug-in hybrid.
Yes.
Love it. My next car will be full EV, not unlike yourself.
I think
it's the future.
I'm converted.
And I would really love to be able to get my Samsung Galaxy 10, which I'm liking pretty much, you suggested from my Pixel 2.
Yeah.
That's a whole separate issue. But I would like to get the screen from it onto my Ford, but my Ford is on Sync 2.
It doesn't have Android Auto or Apple's CarPlay. No. Well, there is some good news because I saw there is somebody who's going to start selling an Android Auto standalone unit.
True.
You can't really, I was informed a couple of weeks ago, replace your head unit because your air conditioning would stop working. There's so many things now tied to that head unit besides your entertainment. But there is going to be, I just saw it, a new Android Auto standalone unit that you could absolutely get all the benefits of Android Auto. Without having to modify your car. I'll get you that information after the break because I don't remember who made it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I think it is being made by... It's somebody big. It was like Sony, I think.
I thought about glue gunning my Pixel C.
Yeah, no, that's not... I mean, that's what everybody does. It's what I do. You get a mount and you put your phone there, but it's not as good as Android Auto.
Especially the new Android Auto looks so
good. Oh, the dark mode, it's so pretty.
Oh.
Yeah, I think Sony, let me see. No. Yeah, you can replace your head unit, but that on a modern car is not apparently.
Well, I could get it upgraded to Sync 3, but it's $1,500.
Yeah, no, you don't want to do that. So yes, Sony has a 9-inch screen receiver. It doesn't replace your head unit, but you'd have to mount it. It'd be like mounting a tablet in your car. They just debuted it this week. It is a Sony CarPlay receiver. That's what they call it. Well, and you know Sony. They also call it the XAV AX8000.
$600.
It's not going to launch till December, unfortunately, but this is brand new. But this is the first I've seen. I think if Sony does well with this, you'll see a lot of people doing this because, there are a lot of cars that don't have CarPlay.
Yeah. Well, like I say, I could upgrade to Sync 3, and then it does have Android Auto, and I'd be able to use Android Auto.
So might be worth doing.
Yeah.
I will not, just as I'm going to buy an EV, I will not buy a car without Android Auto and CarPlay. That is such a great. We have it in our Chevy Bolt.
I didn't know enough when I bought the car.
No, I didn't either.
All that.
Also, it's fairly new. I remember Jeff Jarvis going through hell trying to find a car that he liked that had it. So it's fairly new. But
that's astounding.
Yeah. But, man, I love it. It's in the Bolt, and I was blown away. We got in the Bolt the first time. I plugged in my phone. It's all going. It's done. It's, you don't have to pair it or anything. It's amazing. It's incredible.
And you're loving the Bolt.
Yeah. I did not expect to. But it was, after tax breaks, $30,000 all in. And this is, like, the top of the line. And, it's got some plastic and stuff. It's not, but it's a quarter of the cost of the Tesla. And it's got this,
4 volts.
It's got the same range. It's going to use the new CCS fast charging, which is going to be ubiquitous thanks to Audi. I'm very excited. I think this is a great. It's little. It's a tiny little car.
Yeah,
but that's all right.
And do you feel as safe in it?
Yeah.
Well, no, nothing like the Tesla. I mean, you feel.
Yeah, I feel very safe.
And it's fun to drive.
Yeah.
Small.
It's not quite as zippy as the Tesla, but again, it's zippy enough. Yeah. Oh, it's fun to drive. Yeah. It has one button drive, which the Tesla did not have. So when you take your foot off the accelerator, it comes to a full stop. You don't have to ever use the brake if you think ahead enough.
Wow.
Yeah.
And, nice.
It does not have adaptive cruise control. I miss that. I would really miss that, but so we're very happy with the Bolt. We really are. We got it for our son, but I think he may not get to use it.
He'll have to get his own.
He's gonna have to get your own Bolt.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I can't tell if I need to upgrade cars or upgrade to Sync 3.
Well, how much is it to upgrade to Sync 3?
It's about $1,500. I have somebody who can, get the unit and put it in for me. It'll be a little less, but it's still.
Yikes. Well, but it is so much better.
I know. I like the car a lot. I mean, I really do enjoy When I'm in Sonoma for a week doing business in Sonoma, I'm getting 80 to 90 miles per gallon because I'm on
Isn't
all
that
of
great?
Them, even
yeah.
though I only go about 30 miles. But if I have to drive to San Luis Obispo,
you still have that capability. Yeah, which is
yeah.
really great.
It's really great. And what's the range on the Bolt?
230.
That's
it's the same as my Tesla was. I know.
I can drive to Mill Valley and back.
Yes. You can drive to Tahoe and back. Well, not back. Drive to Tahoe, charge it, and come back.
And then pull over. Yeah, okay.
Break down.
Okay. Okay. Great.
Nice to talk to you. Always a pleasure, Richard.
As
See
always.
You. Take care.
I'll try and bring you a pizza crust.
No, because then I'll eat it.
Okay, never
See
mind.
See if it's really keto.
I meant cauliflower. Cauliflower. Keto.
See if it's really keto. If it's really keto, I'll eat it. Okay. Yeah, because
I
miss
Thanks.
You heard Bruce and me talking about pizza. That's a tough one.
Yeah.
And it's ubiquitous. Oh man.
Yep.
Pizza's everywhere. All
it's
right.
It's universal food.
It is.
I love pizza.
It is the perfect
Dear
food.
God.
Oh, I wish I could just live on pizza.
All right. Sorry.
Take care, Richard.
Thanks.
Bye.
Okay, bye.
And therein lies the tale. There's the problem
what?
Right there. You want to live on pizza. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Oh, yeah, it's that time. Time to talk about computers and the internet and home theater and take digital photography and smartphones and smart watches and all that stuff. 8888, ask Leo. That's the phone number if you want to call in and ask a question or make a comment or make a suggestion. 827 5536. That's the number. Well, I never call myself. That's why. Irwin in the Bronx. Hey, Irwin.
Hey, how are you, Leo?
I'm great. How you doing?
Pretty good. Listen, thank you for the recommendation on the Moto G7.
Oh, isn't that a nice... Did you buy it? That just came out.
Yes, I did. That's what we're talking on now.
Oh, yeah. I'm glad you like it. Yeah. Generally, when people ask me for a low-cost Android phone, I say the best is the Moto. But I'm glad to hear you liking it.
Yes. Question about partitioning a hard drive.
Yes.
Okay. I'm doing this for someone else, and I've got to do it remotely. So, and I'm using a product that you don't have to try, so we won't have to mention what it is. But the way...
How do you do remote partitioning?
Well, I've been using something. I've been going through Windows... Okay, and being able through disk management to extend the partition to the right.
Oh, yeah. Okay, that's fine.
Okay.
You're not really repartitioning. It reminds me of the time that I was doing a podcast on Skype, and I had my friend Paul Thurrott, we do a Windows podcast. He's talking to me on Skype, and I'm talking to him. And I say, I got the new Windows update, just came in. He said, well, whatever you do, don't press I pressed return and installed it. And, of course, the whole show shut down because I was installing Windows. So
yeah, right.
That'd be the problem. If you're doing a partition over the Internet, you're on remote access. The minute you partition the drive, you're going to lose that control. And now you don't know what happened.
I got it to work.
It's very brave of you. That's all I can say. Very brave of you, Irwin.
I used to be an IT tech. And a programmer, so there's very little I feel that I can do, even with the stuff that I retired about 15 years ago.
Nice. That's good. Well, I know you're a regular listener, and I appreciate it, and thank you. And
yeah,
okay. Yeah, you're not really, you're just adjusting the partitions. You're not really repartitioning. No. Yeah. Yeah, you can do that, sure. It's a little risky, because if something goes wrong, then what?
Yeah, well, okay. The machine is fairly safe because there's nothing on it.
That's good. Okay.
It was just upgraded via Microsoft's free update to Windows 10.
Understand, though, if you do remote brain surgery on a machine, it may require a visit to the machine if it doesn't all go well.
Yeah, well, that will probably happen because my question about it is this. I can do it easily to the right, but how do you extend the partition to the left?
How do you expand the partition?
That's correct.
Yeah. Usually you can. I mean, I think the capabilities, this is Windows' own built-in partition manager, and it's in the storage management option of Windows. If you hit Windows key X and hit disk storage, you'll see it. It gives you a graphical display of your disks and how they're partitioned. And you can, in theory, drag the partitions left or right to resize them. You can even delete partitions, slide partitions over. But the ability to actually do that is dependent on the state of the drive. And you know this because you've been doing this a long time. You can't, for instance, repartition a heavily fragmented drive. You have to defragment it before you can partition it because you need to make some clear space. The partitioning requires there's enough room to slide it over to the left or the right. There's nothing else on that drive in that area because you're going to move over there. So sometimes a drive can be too fragmented or too disorganized, or just the nature of the drive is it's difficult to realign the partitions. I'm not sure how this changes with SSDs. I'm sure it changes quite a bit, and I'm sure you're using SSDs. So,
No. The machine that's being used is not an SSD. It's a laptop and a hard drive.
Okay. Well, maybe try defragging and then doing it. You need to have enough completely unoccupied free space to do these movements. And you should, I'm pretty sure, I mean, I don't have it in front of me. I guess I could mess with my surface over here. But
my next question about this is this. Okay, there's nothing on this machine, and it's just a matter of booting up from a stick, and we can reinstall Windows.
Okay.
Anytime.
Go ahead then.
So then, no. But every time we do it, we keep on ending up with the same thing. In other words, it's the boot sector, blank space, C drive,
right.
Blank space.
Right.
So how do I get rid of the blank space?
Oh, the blank space is not huge, right? It's 100 megabytes or something.
Yeah. Something
that's like for alignment. That's just for alignment purposes. You can't get rid of it. You see, we computer users are very OCD. We see, even though you have a drive that is probably several thousand gigabytes in size, we worry about a few hundred megabytes here and there, and we don't like it. There's that little gap. I just want to nudge it over, and I understand that, but often you can't because things have to be in fixed positions, and there's alignment issues with the sectors, and I bet you that's why it's that way.
Okay.
If you really wanted to, you could with a GPT disk, a GPT partition. The chat room is saying you can't do it remotely. You're going to have to go in and use GParted.
Mm-hmm.
But if you really wanted to, you could probably do it with GPT. But I wouldn't. Windows knows what it's doing. Anytime you try to, let's not be so OCD. We're so OCD. Let's not be so OCD. Let's just say, okay, there's a little extra. That's what do you call that? You spill a little wine on the table or a little salt. It's for Elijah. It's just a little extra. Just giving that to Elijah. That's Elijah's hard drive.
Okay.
He can use it.
Thank you.
Okay.
Now, one other thing, if I might.
Sure.
About modems. You say to get DOCES, D-O-C-E-S, I'm not sure.
DOCSIS 3.0, yeah.
Okay. I've seen them 3.1.
Yeah, that's the new standard.
Can I top the extra dollars to the 3.1 or just simply go for a 3.0?
So DOCSIS stands for, get ready for this, Data Over Cable Service Interface Specifications. But what it really is how the cable company configures its provisioning from their servers to your cable modem. It uses a protocol called DOCSIS. And so DOCSIS 3.1 is coming. I think DOCSIS 4 is coming, for that matter. But there's no point in having a higher standard than the standard your cable company currently offers. So most cable companies are currently at DOCSIS 3. The nice thing about DOCSIS 3, it does give you IPv6 and it gives you higher speeds. 3.1 is coming. It'll be even higher speeds, but unless your cable company is planning to give you 10 gigabits down, I wouldn't worry about it. There's a lot of benefits to DOCSIS 3, and then DOCSIS 4 is coming, which has even more benefits. But again, it has to be the same protocol on both ends. So you're going to use whatever the cable company is using. You could ask, you could call your cable company and say, hey, are you planning to go to DOCSIS 3.1 anytime soon? If they are, then you'd be future-proofing by buying a cable modem that's 3.1.
Gotcha.
But I think there's not much benefit to that unless they plan to. They're slow to move to these protocols. But actually, I shouldn't say that, because one of the reasons cable companies moved to DOCSIS 3, it gave them a lot of bandwidth shaping capabilities so that they could slow you down if they wanted to. And so they like those features. Okay. Yeah. So there may be stuff in 3.1 that does give them an incentive. Yeah, there's energy. Yeah, yeah. DOCSIS 3.1 technology, I'm looking at Wikipedia, includes some new energy management features that will help the cable industry reduce its energy usage and uses the DOCSIS PI algorithm to reduce buffer bloat. Those are all good things. Comcast says there will be DOCSIS 3 in some cities. Mediacom says some cities. They were saying this in 2016. So, yeah, ask your cable provider. If they say, yeah, we're about to go to 3.1, then, yeah, future-proof. Thanks, Erwin. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls coming up. 8888 Ask Leo. Website is techguylabs.com. And about half an hour away from some crappy gadget from the Gizwiz. Hey, no, it's a good thing. That's what he does. Stay here. Our podcast today brought to you by Simply Safe. I got one right here. I love the Simply Safe system. This is such a great story. I think a wonderful story about a young couple. He went to Harvard. He was an engineer, brilliant guy. They were renters, and they wanted a security system. A lot of their friends, they were getting burglarized. They were very, you know, worried about it. But they realized that, you know, because they were renters, they couldn't just call they didn't want to spend the money to call somebody, come install it, drill holes in the wall and stuff like that to install a security system. But he was an engineer. He said, you know what, I can do it. And he designed Simply Safe. Now, many years later, millions of people have turned to Simply Safe because you can install it yourself. It's easy, no drilling involved, just peel and stick. And they've got all the sensors, motion sensors. They've got window open, door open, glass break, even water sensors. You can put one next to your water heater so you'll know if it springs a leak. And Simply Safe gives you that same 24/7 professional monitoring for a lot less. There's never a contract, no hidden fees, no fine print. And around-the-clock monitoring starts at just $15 a month. That's about a third what those other guys cost. It's a great solution. They even have added now with their cameras a video verification technology, which helps police get on the scene 3.5 times faster. And that's a big deal. On average, it takes police as 45 minutes to respond to a home security alarm because a lot of police assume it's a false alarm. So they move the call to the bottom of the list. Not Simply Safe Home Security. This video verification will let the police know, no, it's really there, and they will get there a lot quicker because they can see that a break-in is happening. The average police time on Simply Safe, not 45 minutes, 7 minutes. Simply Safe protects every door, every window, every room with 24/7 professional monitoring with no contract. I pick them as number one. It's what I set my kids up with, but they've got awards from CNET and the New York Times Wirecutter. And this is the base. Hold this up because it's a base unit, which is attractive, right? You could have that in your living room. But what's great is bad guys could take a bat to it. They can throw it out the window, and the police will still be there in 7 minutes. I love this. Right now, we've got a great deal at simplysafe.com/twit. Free shipping. And, of course, as always, a money-back guarantee. So if you're not satisfied, you get your money back. You will be, though. simplysafe.com/twit. simplisafe.com/twit. It's home security done right. And I love these guys. They're a great sponsor. And they make such a good product. And I want to spread the word. The summertime, this is a time when you want to have a home security system. Bad guys assume people are out of town. And if they see that Simply Safe yard sign, I have put the sign up. If they see that, they're just going to go to the next house down. You don't have it, you might be the next house down. SimplySafe.com/twit. Thank you for supporting the podcast, Simply Safe. And thank you for supporting the tech guy by using that special URL. Back to the show. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. Edward Edmonton. How you doing, Edward?
Great, Leo. Can you hear me?
I hear you great. All the way from the Oil City.
That's right. It is such a pleasure to talk to you, listen to you for years and years and years back to Tech TV up in Canada when we got it.
Yeah.
I have a podcasting question.
Oh, good. I was just at the podcast movement, the big podcast convention in Orlando all week. It was so fun to hang out with a bunch of podcasters.
That would have been amazing and probably useful for me. I feel like I've been watching you and listening to you for so long, I feel like I could do it, but
anybody can do it. That's one of the lessons of podcasting that I kind of regret is it's too darn easy. Now everybody can do it.
That's encouraging.
Yeah. What do you want to do? What's your topic?
So I have been asked with four people to do a talk of some sort to internally within our company. So it's across two different cities. And I thought, why not just do a podcast?
Sure.
Everybody seems to know what that is now.
Sure. You know, many years ago, before I was doing this, I mean, many years ago, I used to do kind of in-house radio shows for Hewlett-Packard. Where we'd interview the executives and stuff. And the idea was that, the Hewlett-Packard's huge and the sales teams were all over the world. They'd get a cassette, that's how long ago this was, with this interview with their CEO or whatever, and they'd get to, hear the company's plans. And there, it was a very good idea. But nowadays with podcasts, any company that doesn't have an internal podcast really ought to. I think it's a great idea.
So I hope it gains traction because I think it would be a great resource, both internally and who knows if, because I'm surrounded by very smart people. So
nice.
Wanting to know what the simplest way to do it. I mean, we have Skype internally, but
I'll tell you the easiest,
it can be live.
The easy peasy way. And it may not fit your needs, but I'll start with this. You can do it on your phone, on your smartphone with an app called Anchor. ANCHOR.FM. Spotify just bought them. And I think that's going to be very beneficial. My daughter came to me with the same question. She'd done a podcast for my podcast network, but she wanted to do her own little thing. And I said, I can set you up. I got all the gear. But, the easiest thing to do would be fire up Anchor FM. You can record into the phone. Most smartphones today have very good microphones, but you can also get an external microphone if you want. You can add sound effects and music. You can take questions, audio questions, through the app, which you can add in. And you can, if you wanted to do interviews, you'd have to be in the same room with the other person, and you could interview them that way. And then the nice thing about Anchor is everything's free. All the hosting's free. The metrics are free. They'll sell ads for you, and that's something I think Spotify plans to do even more of. And this is the big issue with podcasting. It's easy to make one. Anybody can record. That's easy. If you have a laptop or a smartphone, you can make a podcast. It's where are you going to host it? Because every download costs you money, right? If you host it traditionally, if you put it on YouTube, you would be one place. That's free. And Anchor FM is free. And both of those really make it very easy. Are you going to interview people over Skype, though? Is that how you're going to do it?
Well, it's going to be, we don't have very good AV right now, but it's going to be a teleconference, and I might run a PowerPoint that'll be shared over Skype,
Oh, you want video too?
No, not necessarily. Not for this case. We could probably do it eventually down the road, but this is kind of a teaser and really just to kind of hear everybody, but I wanted to record it.
Yeah, I strongly recommend going with audio first, only because people have time to listen to audio. It takes a little more of a commitment to watch video. And I say that as somebody who does video of everything. It's more work to make it, and it's harder for people to watch it. So the sweet spot, the low-hanging fruit is, of course, audio. If you can do it on your phone, this is easy. It's hosted by Anchor. Anchor puts it on iTunes and everywhere podcast subscriptions are, just like a regular podcast. It's indistinguishable from a regular podcast, but it's completely a free service. But if you need to do Skype calls, something more elaborate, then it does get more complicated. To do Skype calls, you could do a single Skype call and record it on a laptop. And there are, depending on whether you're on Windows or Mac, there are special tools you can use to record it because, unfortunately, it's a little tricky to record both ends of a Skype call. You can record one end easily, the remote end, but your end is harder. But there are ways to do that. It just depends what your budget is. If you're getting the company to pay for it, then I would then it gets easier. You can throw money at it. If I were going to be doing this myself at home without all of the fancy gear that I have here, I would get a Sound Devices interface. It's designed to interface a good microphone or two or three. You can have, I think, up to three microphones to your computer for recording. But you can also use it to record Skype calls. It'll record standalone, but it'll also help you record on the computer. You probably want to record on the computer because it's where the editor is going to be. So why record off the computer then transfer it over?
Right.
They call it the pre. I'm looking at one right now. It's the USB pre from Sound Devices. It lets you hook up real microphones, so it gives you an interface to a real microphone. Better microphones mean better sound. Better sound means better podcast, in my opinion. But that's the expensive. This is like a $600 device. So that's, I just gave you a pretty broad range from free to $600.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Leo. really exciting to talk to you.
I think you should do it. It sounds great. And you know what? The reason I was told at this event that there are 2,000 new podcasts a week, of which fewer than 1% end up making more than 10 episodes.
Huh.
In other words, there's a lot of pod fading. So my real advice to you is it's easy to make one. Keep making it. Consistency. Keep doing it every week. And at first it's hard because, nobody knows about it. You got to do a lot of marketing to get the word out. But as the audience grows, as you get better, it's so much fun. You can really build an audience. Anybody can be a broadcaster these days. It's a lot harder when I was starting out. Yeah. You're going to have fun. There are, Behringer makes, there are a number of companies that make podcast kits that include mixers and microphones. Behringer's is very good, Behringer, and fairly inexpensive. So I need an hour with you to really give you all the details you need to know. But the main details, get started and do it. And if you want a really nice unit that allows you to record at a table with your computer, look at the USB Pre 2 from Sound Devices. I'll put a link in the show notes. So it depends a lot on your setup. If you're at a table with a bunch of people, you need a mixer. If you have Skype on a computer, you need special software to do that. It just depends kind of on what your plans are for it. And of course, if it's just you, Anchor's easy. You can do Anchor in the. I have a little Anchor podcast because it's so easy. It's so fun.
That's exciting. I just remember what you went through with the Skypeosaurus.
Oh my God! Yeah. You don't have to do that anymore.
Wow.
It's a lot easier. Yeah.
I really appreciate everything that you've done over the years. It made me a resource for a lot of people, and I just listened to your to your network, so many shows.
We used to do, shows and workshops on podcasting back in the day when it was so new.
Uh-huh.
I noticed even at the podcast movement, there weren't a lot of, here's how you podcast seminars. There really should have been. But I think it's pretty easy nowadays. I feel like.
Yeah, I appreciate the tips. That's my goal and hope. Right now it's just the opportunity to kind of, get my feet in the ocean, as it were, and learn how to swim. So this was
good.
Exciting.
Is the company going to kick in at all?
Well, that's my goal. I'll do this and says, why don't we do this internally as a resource? Everybody's listening to podcasts. Why don't we make our own? And it could be valuable just in general to the public.
Right. What's the industry? What's the business?
It's energy industry, and there's a lot of change up here in Alberta.
Oh, I bet there is.
Texas.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oil industry up there, yeah. Yeah. I mean, the beauty about podcasts is somebody was saying, well, I only have 1,000 listeners. I said, yeah, but if it's the right 1,000, that's what matters. If you had every 1,000 oil industry executives listening to a show, you'd be pretty important in that field.
be amazing.
Right. And in some ways, being narrower and more specialized is more likely to do that.
I think that's the sort of my idea. And it would be fantastic because I'm surrounded by so many really smart people. And with energy, there's a lot of innovation and change happening in it. And it's all happening here in Alberta for sure. So I think a lot of people would be interested, the right people anyways. And I think that's the most important thing.
Well, good luck. And stay in touch. And if there's anything I can do, Edward, let me know. You can email me and I'll be glad to give you some advice.
Well, I think I got a good starting point. It'd be exciting. Get some XLRs and some good mics.
Yeah. Get that USB pre-tune.
It's probably the most important.
It is absolutely the most important. You know, for me, that's number one. Even video audio is the most important.
100%. Yep. If it has the right sound, it's part of the branding.
Yeah.
Plus,
yeah.
Nobody's going to listen to this crappy audio.
Right.
Right. Conference call.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Next, you know, there's going to be another podcast event in L.A. In a few months and then in Dallas next August. You should go to it. I took my son. He learned so much.
That is a thing.
Yeah. Get the podcast and then your company will pay for it. Hey, this is going really well, Edward. We think you should learn more. That's the only risk. You might become a professional podcaster.
Subject matter expert. Who knows? I'm game.
All right. Hey, take care.
Thanks, Leo.
Sure, Edward.
Yeah, you too.
Anytime.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK-LEO, the phone number. Actually, there are a lot of podcasting conferences. I'm just looking at a list. We'll put this list in the show notes from a website called podcastinsights.com. Thank you, Scooter X, for sharing that with me. There's lots of places you can go to learn about podcasts. That's for sure. I just came back from one called Podcast Movement in Orlando, but there's one coming up in New Jersey, the Mid-Atlantic Podcast Conference, London Podcast Festival, the EdTech Podcast Festival, the International Podcast Day of September 30th. I'll be wearing the traditional podcaster's outfit, whatever that might be, jammies, I guess. Third Coast Audio Festival, OzPod in Sydney. Brisbane has We Are Podcast. Boy, it just goes on and on and on. Chicago Podcast Festival. 8888-ASK-LEO, the phone number. Mark in Framington, New York. I'm sorry, Farmington, New Mexico. I was close. Hello, Mark.
Hey, Leo, how you doing? Yeah, you were close.
I was close.
Hey, great information you're putting out on a wide range of subjects, and I have this podcast stuff is really interesting.
Good.
My wife's thinking about doing that, but my question is this, coming back to looking after our parents. My mom has macular degeneration. I got a program for her that would read her email.
Aww.
She was the secretary her whole life, so she's very keyboard savvy.
Yeah.
However, the program's not being supported anymore. I'm wondering if you have any ideas about something that I can get set up for her. She's running a Windows 7 Pro machine.
So what you want is something called text-to-speech. Windows actually has text-to-speech built in. I don't know if it would be good enough for what you want, but there are many, many other solutions. Text-to-speech or TTS, if you Google it, there are, of course, expensive solutions used by blind people. There are a lot of JAWS is, of course, the best known. It's very expensive. And that really is more than just actually, that's the opposite, isn't it? You want speech to text. You want her to read you want the email read to her, not dictated.
Correct.
Okay,
I want her
text
to
speech.
Be able to, so she can open up the email and it's going to read it to
her. Read it out.
Yeah, and just the pertinent stuff. She doesn't need all the...
Yeah, that's the problem with the stuff for blind users. It does everything. It reads the controls. It reads the buttons.
There you go. Yep.
Yeah. Office does have support in Outlook for... There's a speak command. So that's the first thing I'd look at. She's using Outlook for her email?
No.
Oh.
She uses it. This program that we got for her it's a whole self-contained product.
Oh, I see. So it's an email program that does text-to-speech. take a look at the Microsoft Outlook. That's a very common reader, and Microsoft builds Speak In, so it will you select the text though. I don't know if her vision is really bad. It might be difficult for her to select the text. I have a friend who has macular degeneration who zooms the screen in so much it's basically a letter per page. You know, he can read one letter at a time.
I know exactly what you're saying. Mom's not quite to that point, but yes.
So that's one way. Is Windows has it kind of built in, and so the Outlook, which is Windows email program, will do that. I don't know if Windows Mail will do it. It might, though. Look for a Speak command there. But then there are lots of third-party readers. The problem is she will have to select the text she wants read. This program you had was great because it kind of knew what to read.
She had to do was click on the email and open the email and start talking to her.
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I don't know.
Yeah, and I think that is a great new opening for anybody who has those abilities, because we're getting a lot of folks now that are getting to this stage in life, and there's a real need for this. There's a really big need for this.
You know, another solution might be a web-based solution. Rather than having a standalone app, who's her email provider?
She's with CenturyLink.
Okay.
Out in California.
Yeah, they may use, in fact, most ISPs, CenturyLink's an ISP, most ISPs use Google or Yahoo or one of the big providers, or Outlook. And then in that case, you could use your browser to do it. And I think there are easy ways to convert browser text to speech. Well, this is an interesting question. I actually have a big button next to all my blog posts on my personal blog, leolaporte.com, that reads the blog post for exactly that reason. I hesitate to recommend JAWS or its open source relative Orca, which is free, because it is for blind people, so it reads everything, not just the text of the email, which is all she wants. It'll say, you know, and then there's a start button, and then there's, you know, it'll read the menus to you. It does everything, because that's how a blind user.
That's what she has now. It's a different program. It's not that. The program that I have, the man that created it, he did it because his wife, I'm not sure, I think she had an eye injury or eye disease.
Yeah. Yeah,
and he created it for her and found that it worked, and so he marketed it, he sold it, and worked great for a while, but it's not being supported any longer. So, but it's kind of like that. It could do email, it could do media, it could do a lot of different things, and all she really used it for was email. And
does she have a smartphone?
No, she can't see it to use it.
She can't see it well enough. Yeah. Of course not.
No, but I got her an Alexa recently, and she loves that because it's easier for her. Because she, of course, all she has to do is speak to it.
Yeah.
So she does have a cell phone, but it's an old flip phone because there's some tactile, you know, she can use that. A smartphone with the smooth screen is not an option for her.
So if she has an Amazon Echo, you can have Echo read your email.
Really? That would be.
Yeah, you have to. Now, it would depend on what her ISP lets you do, but you can. I'm seeing if it's Gmail only. I'll put a link to a Lifehacker setup for how to get Amazon's Echo to read your email. It can read messages, too, as I remember, text messages. So I think increasingly Amazon's making this be a device that can do exactly what you want, which is talk somebody who has vision difficulties through their life, and they can talk back to it. So,
yeah, that would be great. And I'm pretty new with this stuff. I've got some tech smarts, but I can't keep up with the advancement of stuff. And I got her that Echo, and I got it set up so all she has to do is say, call Mark. And
isn't that nice?
That's
a perfect example. So if CenturyLink uses Gmail, Outlook, Hotmail, or Windows Live Mail, those last three are all from Microsoft, Amazon's Echo can read it. If her ISP doesn't, you could set up a Gmail account for her and have her email forward from her CenturyLink account to Gmail. That's free. and then have the Echo read it. So I'll put at techguylabs.com, our website, I'll put in the show notes a link to how to connect your account, your Amazon account, her Amazon account in this case. It would also read her calendar and could read her text messages if she wants. And wow. So what the way you would do it is you'd say, Echo, read my email. And it'll start reading all the mail you've received in the last 24 hours.
Well, hers is the Alexa. Is that the same as
same. I don't like to say the A word. I don't want to.
Oh, sorry.
I say Alexa, read my email, millions of people across the country will start hearing their email. That's no good.
Yeah, got it.
Yes, it's the same. Hey, you're a good boy. You're a good son. Thanks for helping your mom. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. The Gizwiz, Dick DiBartolo, coming up right after this. Lisa and I were dancing at the podcast movement, and she says, where's the beat? I said, I know. You just got to listen for that boom, boom, boom. There's a lot of beats going on, but there's one. See, with disco, you never ask, where's the beat?
It's there, yeah.
It's right there. That's the beat. Dick DiBartolo. He's our disco guy. He's wearing his disco shirt. He's wearing his little cornu on his gold chain. It's open down to his waist. He's boogie-oogie-oogieing, just like he can't boogie no more. Whoa, what's that light? What are you doing there, Dickie D?
Well, I'm doing my own disco light.
Dickie Bartolo, Mad's maddest writer. For many a year, he is also our gizmo wizard, or gizwiz. Oh, you know, when I was dancing, my Apple Watch said, it looks like you've taken a hard fall.
Oh, that's...
I'm okay. And then it says, provide some detail. I fell, but I'm okay. I did not fall. Thank you, Apple Watch.
Is there no option? I was disco dancing.
I guess. An option. I was dancing. It just looks like I was falling.
Yeah, that is so funny.
Yeah, well, it was saying it was buzzing at me. It was gonna call 911, so I'm...
Oh, my gosh.
Well, I turned that on because I thought if I fall, I'd like that. But I guess if I don't want it to turn on every time I dance... I must be a terrible dancer. It's indistinguishable from falling.
Yeah.
Dick joins us each week with a crazy gizmo or gadget that he's picked up on his way around New York City. What do you have for us today?
Yeah, well, you know the company My Charge? Do you have anything from them?
My Charge? I don't know.
My Charge makes a lot of external battery charges. They make something called the Hub that has a built-in USB-C and a micro and Apple charger.
Oh, nice.
But they introduced something new called the My Charge Adventure Power Lumens, a bizarre thing, name. But actually, for disco dancing, I guess you could use it. I think this is a great thing for people who are taking pictures because it's a 20 LED light array.
Whoa.
And you can click
so
it on
light either. And a battery.
And the battery, exactly. It's a 10,000 milliamp power bank.
Nice. That's big.
And then you can click it into daylight or you can click it into warm light. And then there are four levels of light that you can have from that. And it can also charge your phone. And for some reason, every device today also has an SOS function. So if you're out in the car and you want to use that as an emergency, it has a little stand in the back that you can use, and you can set it for SOS. It's $59.99. I just looked on Amazon, and for some reason, there's $5 off. Click this box. But, Leo, researching where it was available, I found this one website, and this is the best thing I've ever seen on the website. It's sort of, how could that possibly work? Here's what it says. Using the battery will not affect the lamp runtime, and using the lamp will not affect the battery life.
Oh, wow. That's a magic.
So that is really something.
Actually, it is the case that LEDs, one of the things I like about LEDs is their SIP power. So, of course, it's going to affect the battery, but maybe not too badly.
No. It says also, I think from my charge, if you put it full bright, all 20, all the way up, 9 hours.
Oh, so it does. Clearly, it does use some battery.
One level down, 15 hours at the lowest brightness, 41 hours.
Oh, see, there you go.
So it's still using it, but you get a couple days.
This would be a great emergency light.
A great emergency light. I throw it in my camera when I go to shows because if there's an exhibit that's badly lit.
So turn it on. Let's see the brightest. I want to see what the brightest is.
That's not the brightest. Let me just go to the...
That was pretty bright.
Yeah, and that's on the... okay, now it's going to go into daylight, and here we go. Come on, you.
The folks at home can't see this, but I will describe.
Okay, very good.
The light, it is bright.
Yeah,
it's not can on you believe? Yet. Dick can't figure out how to turn.
Oh,
it on.
There!
Oh my God, it's retina searing bright. It's very bright.
Yeah, it's very bright. Yeah. And then if I hold that in, it'll go on over to a different daylight, which is still way bright.
Oh, so it's different colors too. That's nice.
Yeah, and now it goes into on camera. It looks like it's still bright, but it's into warm light.
Nice.
Yeah, pretty neat.
This is the Power Lumens 10,000 milliamp hour power bank with built-in 20 LED light. That's a lot. $60 MSRP. You can get a link to this and Dick's GizWiz video on his website, gizwiz.biz. That's where all the links to everything he shows on this show and other shows. He does many shows, including the early morning show on ABC World
ABC.
News Now.
Yeah.
Yep. Always got some great gadgets on there and a chance to play when you're at the website, gizwiz.biz, the What the Heck Is It contest, a close-up of a, wait a minute, you're going to have your annual meetup is coming up.
Yeah, September 29th is the meetup.
Oh, that's exciting.
And Mr. Chad Johnson is flying in for it.
Your co-host on the GizWiz podcast. That'll be fun. That's the 9th annual GizWiz meetup with OMG Chad. And then I was going to see what the heck is it. You got till the end of, this month to figure it out and win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine. Dickie D, thank you so
much. Yes, sir.
Always a pleasure.
Okay, I'm glad you're well. I'm glad your watch has
I did
calmed
not fall.
Down.
I did not. Oh, hi, Dick. I did not fall. I just was dancing. That's really embarrassing. That is so embarrassing that thought my dancing was a big tumble on the ground. Thank you, Dickie D. Gizwiz.
Okay, buddy. See you next week.
Bye-bye. I think I have time to squeeze in one more call. Alan's been very patient, hanging on in Wakefield, Mass. Hello, Alan. Are you there? I think we lost him. I hear something in the background. Oh, he's listening to the radio. There you go, Alan.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
I am great. What can I do for you today?
Hey, I was just calling because,
Oh, don't listen to the radio, Alan. That'll confuse you. It'll confuse you. You'll hear me talking to you minutes later. You'll get your answer tomorrow. It won't be helpful. I actually know what you're going to ask because I see it on the screen here. Heather wrote it down. Thank you, Heather. I mean, sorry. Kim wrote it down. Thank you, Kim. You want to know how you can get the best results for your TV antenna. And I always send people to two sites, so I'll just give you those right now because I'm running out of time. One is tvfool.com. The other is antennaweb.org. And those are two great sites. You put in your zip code. It'll tell you where the stations are and what kind of antenna is best for those stations and where to aim it. It's really good. TVFool.com or AntennaWeb.com. I'd use both. Thank you, Big Pee-wee, my musical director, for making this happen. Thank you so much, Kim Schaffer, for answering the phones. And thanks to all of you for joining me. Couldn't do it without you. We'll see you next time, okay? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, Security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.